concrete, practical proposals to speed up growth, strengthen the middle class, and build new ladders of opportunity into the middle class. Some require congressional action, and I'm eager to work with all of you. But America does not stand still, and neither will I. So wherever and whenever I can take steps without legislation to expand opportunity for more American families, that's what I'm going to do.
Mr. President, this is your moment. We're ready to be led.
That's what I believe the American people are looking for, not a focus on politics, not a focus on elections, but a focus on the concrete steps that can improve their lives. That's going to be my focus. I'm looking forward to Congress doing the same. But once again, I want to thank the leadership for coming together and getting this done. Hopefully next time, it won't be in the 11th hour. One of the things that I said throughout this process is we've got to get out of the habit of governing by crisis. And my hope and expectation is everybody has learned that there's no reason why we can't work on the issues at hand, why we can't disagree between the parties while still being agreeable, and make sure that we're not inflicting harm on the American people when we do have disagreements. So hopefully that's a lesson that will be internalized, and not just by me, but also by Democrats and Republicans, not only the leaders, but also the rank and file.
So I appreciate what the administration's doing. They're taking the right approach to this. Benghazi was a complete failure. The threats were real there. The reporting was real. And we basically dropped the ball. We've learned from Benghazi, thank God, and the administration's doing this right.
But I do think that Boehner and McConnell were the most like the adults in Washington this week and basically saying, you say you want to deal with us. Boehner offered the moon, and the president rejected that offer. And then McConnell, just imagine this is how bad and dysfunctional Washington is, that McConnell can't deal with Senator Reid, or Senator Reid won't deal with him. So we have to call Vice President Biden to please come and help us. And people in Washington on both sides of the aisle really do like Joe Biden, and he was the one person who could help bring them all together.
Do you think John Boehner speakership can survive this crisis?
Sure. Sure. He's a decent fellow. He has done the right thing. At long last, he has done the right thing by having this come up on the floor of the House. We've had moments where we've depended on the Republicans around to bringing it to the floor. I never saw anything like what Harry Reid did. To watch him was to watch a master at work. He was superb, intellectually, politically astute, and just the sheer stamina of it all. And it was a sign of the respect that his members have.
Appreciate everyone's cooperation. I'm glad we're able to cloture on this legislation. This legislation and this vote that just took place. Members on the other side of the aisle, especially John McCain, on a Sunday show said, I don't think there should be a filibuster on this. John McCain is a leader of, has been a leader in this country for 31 years. People respect his opinion. And I'm grateful to all Republicans.
President, great. I spoke to him three times yesterday. He called me for the last time at midnight last night. I asked me what I needed, and I said if you could expedite the major disaster declaration without all the normal FEMA mumbo-jumbo. He got right on it. I got a call from FEMA at 2 a.m. The president has been all over this, and he deserves great credit. I've been on the phone with him, like I said, yesterday personally three times. He gave me his number at the White House, told me to call him if I needed anything, and he absolutely means it. The president has been outstanding.
That you so aptly described as a citadel of justice, represented by a lady who wears nothing but a blindfold, has been politicized and is the subject of ridicule and scorn and a lack of confidence. And then I think of the top law enforcement official in the country. And there are discussions of criminal conduct, and he's become nothing, in my judgment, but a political tool. He's not a prosecutor. He's a political...
Breaking the law, breaking the law. Breaking the law, breaking the law. Breaking the law, breaking the law. Breaking the law, breaking the law.
The President Obama of disregarding the law is really one of the most troubling aspects of this presidency. That over and over again, when he disagrees with the law, rather than try to change it, rather than go to Congress and try to change the law, he simply refuses to comply with it. And that's something that ought to trouble everybody. It ought to trouble Republicans. It ought to
Not
trouble
all
Democrats.
Executive orders are bad. There are instances in which the law authorizes the president to act by executive order. Number two, it may well be the case, in fact, I'll concede for purposes of this discussion, it has been the case that presidents of both political parties have in the past abused power in their executive orders. But the fact that other presidents have done it doesn't justify it. Even still, what this president has done is unprecedented. What this president has done is to repeatedly change laws, even laws that he himself has pushed through Congress for his own political benefit under circumstances that he deems difficult, where he considers it inconvenient to go through Congress.
And that's growing pains as a party, and the Republican Party will struggle. But I've seen this since I was a kid. You know, I was there in 1976 when Reagan came forward and everybody said, you know, you need to sit down and wait your turn, and he didn't. But ultimately, his message became the Republican message. So that's what we're going through now. We've lost a couple presidential elections, and we're going to have some growing pains until we find our voice. And some of us hope that voice will be one for limited government and maximal freedom.
We need a rebellion. We need to rebel against the status quo. Status quo has given us $17 trillion in debt. And frankly, that's been a little bit from both sides.
Republicans want the IRS to go after the Tea Parties. Got it? They want to go after the Tea Parties.
Why?
Because the Tea Parties are a outside threat to their power hole. And I'm telling you, the lobbying consulting class of the Republican Party and Republican leadership who have been attacking the Tea Parties and alienating them, they want the IRS to
do this. As far as the Tea Party and others are concerned, it's anybody to the left of Ted Cruz is a rhino, a Republican in name only, which, as I say, is an insult. But you know what? The real rhinos are the people in the Tea Party and on the hard right, because they have made it clear over and over again that their allegiance is not to the Republican Party.
Frankly,
but to
I
their
just
particular
think that they've lost all credibility. You know, well, they pushed us into this fight to defund Obamacare and to shut down the government. Most of you know, my members know, that wasn't exactly the strategy that I had in mind.
Joining us now from Austin, Texas, Fox News analyst Karl Rove. You think that was a good strategy that Boehner excoriated the far right?
Well, let's be clear. What he's after are a group of Washington, D.C.-based groups, Club for Growth, Freedom Works, Heritage Action principally, that he believes have put his members in a bad place by, in his view, bullying and threatening them with consequences if they don't vote the way that
members of
they
Congress
think they ought
to vote.
Have gotten in a place where they have these young aggressive groups, Freedom Works, lesser extent Club for Growth. They're basically saying, do what we tell you to do, or we are going to primary you. And they're fed up with it, because like Club for Growth went out and said, we're going to run, we're going to get primary challengers to 9 conservative Republicans in the House who are not conservative enough.
He's also
enough
up there with
their
that stupid little third grade whiteboard of his, with his fourth grade writing style, talking about how they committed $30 million to Tea Party candidates. Bring on your little whiteboard. We're ready.
Unfortunately, we had 3 or 4 dozen Republicans in the House, who are Cruz Republicans, who basically threatened to bring the House down if John Boehner did not pursue this policy. John knew it was not going to work, but he probably had no choice. I understand his position. But I'm really more concerned about why more Republicans around the country didn't join me in denouncing Ted Cruz. I mean, now we have people who are on the sidelines who are coming forward, but we have to take a stand here. We cannot allow our party to be taken over by the likes of Ted Cruz and Rand Paul. I mean, these are people are isolationists. I consider them rhinos.
I understand where Senator Cruz is coming from. We have a cordial relationship, and I respect his right to exercise his rights as a United States Senator, which he did last week. But I allege that there was no plan. There was no plan once we had taken the United States on the brink of this financial crisis that we were approaching. I appreciate our leadership voting the way that they did, even though they face primary oppositions, especially Senator McConnell. But he exercised his rights. There was enough of us that we moved forward and put this issue behind us and now focus on Obamacare, on the economy, on many other issues in which we think are winning issues.
Mr. President, this is your moment. We're ready to be led. Some require congressional action, and I'm eager to work with all of you.
But America does not stand still, and neither will I. So wherever and whenever I can take steps without legislation to expand opportunity for more American families,
break the law, 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 break the law.
I know some of that opening was a little nauseating, but that was intentional. Do you notice how the media, especially the Washington media, the Democrats, the RINOs, and the rest of the Washington consultant lobbyist establishment complex love to kiss each other's asses? I said kiss, not kick, because that's what they do. Right on the sphincter. The name of the game in Washington, D.C. is power. As far as the Imperial City is concerned, it is the only government of consequence in America, and perhaps the world. States' authority means nothing, local autonomy means even less, and individual sovereignty is irrelevant. Power attracts the corrupt, and the constitutional separation of powers has been consolidated in the Imperial Presidency by both parties of the Democrat-Republican duopoly. They only fight about which wing gets to choose the current meat puppet in the White House. Sycophants suck up to, flatter, and jockey for favor from the seat of power. It matters not if they're from the same party as the emperor, providing him with cover, or the, quote, opposition party, feigning indignation while furthering the emperor's agenda. These power-hungry sycophants enable the executive branch to act extra-constitutionally with no regard for law, order, or rights. A lawless government is not a government, but a master. Our Constitution is the binding framework that guarantees rights. Doesn't give them, it just guarantees them. Codifies certain duties, duties go along with rights, and it delegates enumerated powers and places strict limits. The American Republic is not subject to the whims of men in power or the passions of the people. Rather, we are all bound by the rule of law, from the greatest to the least, especially those charged, although temporarily, with the administration of government. The rule of law limits the government from tyranny and the people from fickle passions and perpetual revolt. It strikes a balance between individual sovereignty and public order so that the citizens may maximize freedom, enjoy stability, and attain the fulfillment of each individual's potential. We either subject everyone to the rule of law, which comports with reason and the natural law, ordering our lives together in liberty, or we permit some to subject others to arbitrary rules, minimizing or even eliminating liberty, and placing the yoke of oligarchy and soft despotism on liberty lovers who shun sycophancy. The constitutional rule of law does not enforce itself. It is the duty of all citizens to enforce the Constitution. That means you. We have to delegate power to temporary representatives and hold them and ourselves accountable. Neither the Democrats nor the Republicans respect the rule of law. But the GOP does have a growing minority of conservative patriots who need your support, and they need a tsunami of grassroots activism right now, not just in November, right now, to grow their ranks and restore and preserve the constitutional republic. Emphasis on constitutional, as in the document of law as drafted and ratified in the late 18th century. Oh, but it's a living, breathing document, Rex. It changes with the times, and we the people, whatever we decide, that's what it is. No, no, and no. James Madison, who knows a thing or two about the Constitution since he drafted most of it, said this in 1824. I entirely concur, this is writing to Henry Lee in a letter, he wrote, I entirely concur in the propriety of restoring to the sense in which the Constitution was accepted and ratified by the nation. In that sense alone, it is the legitimate Constitution. And if that be not the guide in expounding it, there can be no security for a consistent and stable state, more than, for a faithful exercise of its powers. If the meaning of the text be sought in the changeable meaning of the words composing it, it is evident that the shape and attributes of the government must partake of the charges to which the words and phrases of all living languages are constantly subject. What a metamorphosis would be produced in the code of law if all its ancient phraseology were to be taken in its modern sense. Now, maybe that's a little too flowery language for today, but that's the problem. English is a living language. In fact, English is the language that has appropriated more words from every other language than any language in history. Keep in mind that English is a Germanic language that was spoken by a people who were Latinized by the Catholic Church and the Romans, and then were invaded in 1066 by the Normans who spoke French. So it is a Germanic-slash-Romantic language, and, of course, it's the language of technology and commerce now, so it changes a lot. So the meaning of, for example, the word welfare in 2014 is quite different than the meaning of the word welfare in 1789. The document was written in 1789, so we used the meaning of the word welfare from back then, not today's twisted version. And that's a very important thing, and that's what Madison was talking about. The document expresses the law as it is stated. If you're going to use the language to pervert the meaning of it, then it isn't a law anymore. It's just whatever whim people want it to be. And Samuel Craig from the Acton Institute, I believe the one in Australia, he writes this about the rule of law. The rule of law, I think, is best understood by considering its opposite, which is the rule of men. The rule of men is when you have the rule of force, the rule of power, the rule of arbitrary subjective opinion. The rule of law means that there are stable, reasonable laws that apply to everyone, regardless of their station in life. And this is extremely important for all sorts of reasons, but it's also important to remember that the origins of the rule of law, in many respects, go back to Christianity, because Christianity said that no one is above God, everyone is subject to the divine law. Oh, Rex, you're bringing theology into it. Well, not really, okay, because we're not talking about any particular Christian tenet in the order of salvation. We're talking about the cultural history of Christianity, which stems 2,000 years, and it is derived from Judeo-Christian morality, Hellenistic philosophy, and Roman law. That is a fact. Now, whether one is a Christian or not does not mean that it matters as far as enjoying the fruits of that culture. Your personal Christianity is between you and God, and your salvation is to be worked out by yourself in great fear and trembling. We are talking here about the cultural framework in which American liberty grew up as a British colony that pulled away and seceded from the empire in order to form our own country, our own republics. That's what's important to remember, and the rule of law is precisely what makes us different than everybody else. So basically, you have a choice. You can work hard now to further liberty by having real conservatives who respect the rule of law and real libertarians, those who respect the rule of law, take over the GOP or watch the statists in both parties push their corporatist agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into an empire abroad and a surveillance state at home. End the destruction of our economy by the Republican-Democrat duopoly and their Keynesian masters at the Federal Reserve by standing with the real conservatives. To defeat the lawless hordes of cultural Marxists, statists, collectivists, oligarchs, useful idiots, and their fellow travelers, especially the Democrat socialists, first you must crush the rhino cants for liberty. You are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Two Guns Rex Akimbo, broadcasting to you from the lawless Imperial City, Washington, District of Corruption.
And I'm your co-host, Trog, from deep within the caves in Crimea, watching the war getting ready to start. Don't tell anybody I'm here. What's the rule of law mean? Hell, we're going to be in a war with Russia, so you can forget that. I don't even know where to begin. That was a really good opening there, Rex. I'm going to actually have to listen to it again because I was, like, trying to do chat. And when I do chat, I can't listen and, you know, process. So I was catching bits and pieces of it. But, yeah, this whole thing, you know, everything that we're dealing with, I I was studying World War One, and I don't know how many people even know what World War One was about. I don't even think the people back then knew what it was about, because it was a debacle. It was just everybody pushing the line, everybody trying to grab more territory, everybody is scared of everybody else. And all of a sudden, one little thing trips up, somebody does something stupid, and the whole freaking world's at war, and you lose 20 million people. And then the whole world is redrawn, and they form up the League of Nations and say, okay, this will work. This League of Nations things that we're doing here, this will prevent the next war. And then 30 years later, we're in another one. You know, another 20 million people get killed. I don't know if anybody knows what the hell the rule of law is. I mean, it's right there in the Constitution. It's pretty clear. It's right there in the Bill of Rights, actually. Probably the most important part of the concept of rule of law, because, you know, really, a law is anything that the man with power and the guns and control of the money tells you is the law. That's what the problem with America is today. The Bill of Rights were established to define the unique power of the individual that the rule of law could not offend, which was really important, because nobody had ever put a Bill of Rights into their legal document, you know, whether it be a constitution or whatever the case may be, because, you know, the whole idea, the founding fathers didn't invent the idea of a constitution. We've had governments and documents, and, you know, we had the Magna Carta. You know, we've had all kinds of things where governments, you know, all get together and the people at the top, you know, write up these declarations and these contracts with other countries and treaties, and then everybody goes, oh, that was really cool, and before the ink dries, you know, somebody's at war with somebody else over somebody else's resources or over religious or whatever. It's usually resources. I mean, that's really the bottom line. Most wars are fought over, you know, over natural resources and land and territory. Now, I think they're fought over bad banking more than anything, you know, because we can't control our own economics, so what the hell, let's go conquer some other countries, you know, and get our corporations in there, rape, pillage, and plunder until somebody stands up and there's another revolution and they kick us out, or before, you know, the world sees what we did. And that's really been our foreign policy, internal policy. You're living it, baby. I mean, I don't know. There are times I don't know what else to say to people. You know, I'm surprised 1,000 people aren't listening right now. We cover things that very few cover. There's only a few people out there that I listen to that I respect, because they really get down to brass tacks on our freaking country's falling apart. And these psychos that run it are insane, and they don't give a crap about you and me. They don't give a crap about the Constitution. They don't give a crap about the rule of law. They don't give a crap about sound money. They don't give a crap about equality or, you know, equal rights or fair business practices. It's all who you know and who you paid off and how many lawyers you got and, you know, how big a contract you can write, because contracts are only as good as the man, you know, who signs it. I mean, if you don't have personal integrity inside the marketplace, inside people's homes, and inside the government, it's always, always, always going to fall apart. And we're living it right freaking now. I've been watching this come most of my adult life. You know, I've said this before, but my mom was a history sociology major, so she was drilling cause and effect into my brain at a very young age. I grew up in the Cold War, you know, so I was always intrigued by the espionage and the battle between, you know, the good, the U.S., and the evil empire, and you know, all that wonderful stuff, and our spies were good and theirs were bad, and what we did was good and theirs was evil. And somewhere along the line, all those lines were blurred, and I can't tell where the hell the good starts and the evil stops anymore. And that's really sad, because when I look out across the country, I look at my state, I look across the country, I look across the world and all the crap going on, and being a student of history, I'm like going, we're due for a war, you know, because they're all insane. Nobody in government. I mean, why do people associate with the Republican Party? It's the platform, you know. I mean, it's smaller government, individual rights, you know, free enterprise, sound money. What the hell do they have that in their platform for? Because that isn't what they were there for. You know, I haven't seen anything since 2010, and Boehner took over, and McConnell took over as the House or the Senate Minority Leader, that represents anything that shows that they're willing to fight for those principles and that platform. Anything. Now we do have, you know, Rand and Cruz and Gowdy and, you know, Gohmert and, you know, Lee and a few other guys that are fighting for those principles. And all day, every day, they are attacked and smeared and lied about. You know, every time Rand gets an interview, you can just see him prodding him. Even this interview on this Ukraine thing, just trying to get him to expose his dad's libertarian leanings, you know, just to show that he's just really a libertarian isolationist. You know, and you can just see it in their questions. And I mean, these guys, I mean, Ted Cruz, you know, you can play video after video after video clip of him or audio, whatever. And he really pretty much says the same damn thing. There's not many new revelations with what Ted Cruz says, because he just keeps fighting the same stupid frickin' questions that both the left and Fox ask him. And I wonder, I really do, Rex, I wonder. Didn't we just do a show a couple days ago? I wonder if anybody will ever get real with the abuses that are going on in our government right now. And I'm not talking about just Obama. I mean, I could play 100 clips of senators and House reps from Democrats and Republicans complaining about the other side when they're in power, raising the debt limit and not fixing the, you know, the big problems that are underlying problems of our economy, and complain about the other group. And that's all the Democrats did when Bush was in power, and he was abusing everything and spending money and raising the debt ceiling and sending us to war all over the world. And then a Democrat gets in power, and then the Republicans are all bitching and moaning and doing the same thing while they all vote for the same shit. Excuse me, I lost it already. And then I listened to this thing on the Ukraine, and I listened to people that I used to respect and the stuff that they're covering and talking about, and I'm going, you don't even get it, and you're just babbling this crap, and all you're doing is creating the Cold War all over again. Nobody's investigated the truth on the ground of what happened in the U.S. involvement in toppling another frickin' sovereign country, sticking a poke in the bear in his butt with a sharp stick in his own territory, and you wonder why the hell he reacts. I'm like going, we are ruled by insane people, Rex, and they're not going to be happy until we're in a damn war, because they don't seem to be able to fix anything else, so I guess war is the solution. It seems to be, because that seems to be all the U.S. does anymore. 24/7, 100 some countries around the world, bases in, what, 500, 600 countries around the world, conflicts in over 100 places around the world, just lost two wars, lost the last one, lost Vietnam, barely, kind of, almost, maybe, kind of, stalemated Korea. We haven't won a frickin' war since World War II. And we're $17 billion in debt, $100 trillion in unfunded liabilities, and they sit up there and they lie. And the frickin' reporters, not frickin' one of them, does reporting or ask the tough questions like when I was growing up and used to watch the news. I don't know. I'm dumbfounded. I mean, help me here, because you're the smart one in this group.
So does this happen a lot? Government commandeering your ship, telling you where to go?
That's what governments are for, getting a man's way.
If I'm the smart one in this group of two, we got a problem, white man. But no, you're absolutely right. I mean, look, I got the brain the size of a walnut. I'm a T-Rex, for goodness sake. I got big teeth. If you want to be free in an ordered manner, you know, there's a reason why freedom of speech, freedom of the press is in the First Amendment, in the first article of the Bill of Rights. Without
a
free press,
taken away.
and a free press is supposed to be precisely that. And that doesn't mean that the press doesn't cost money or it's free to say whatever the hell it wants. It's a free press in the sense that it's free from influence by government, which, other than Obama trying to stick FCC drones inside each newsroom, is more or less free from government. But the problem is that the same friggin', banker corporate interests that own the media outlets in this country are also the same ones that own the people in government. So whether there's a direct control by the government or the fact that the same interests own both the media and the government, it eliminates the concept of what the Founding Fathers intended with a free press. The reason you have a free press is so that there's inquiry, there's debate, you call them out. It is supposed to be the instrument of the people to receive information from sources other than the government, proper analysis, and also the feedback mechanism to the idiots in government that were watching you and holding you accountable. That's not happening with our media. So that's where the alternate media. That's where the alternate media. That's where the alternate media rose up. But of course, you know, the corporatist interests are not stupid. They've also infiltrated the alternate media and kind of twist your mind that way too. You need to have proper discernment when it comes to these things. You have to look at various sources, understand their bent, their angle, their propaganda, and then, you know, kind of triangulate them and measure them against something objective so that you can really discern the real information. And that's kind of what we're trying to do here. What we're trying to do here with this show, which, by the way, only exists, because Chris and I pay for it, but it only gets listened to because you tune in and because you share the show. So thank you to everybody who shares our show out there on Facebook, on Twitter, all over the Internet, tells people about it. That is the only way we get out there. And if you don't get this information out there now, November might just be, you know, another election where more rhinos and dummy rats get elected and nothing changes, and we just keep managing the worthless decline and the whimpering and withering away of America. But if you share it and you get it out there, that's how it changes things. I mean, not just us. I'm not saying that we're the greatest things in sliced bread, although we are pretty awesome. But, you know, there's Ben Swan, there's Josh Tolley, there's alternate media television.
Ron Paul Channel.
The Ron Paul Channel. So there's all other sources. But the idea is that you got to get this stuff out there. And it doesn't mean that you agree with everything. I mean, I'll share stuff from Ron Paul. I don't agree with everything Ron Paul does. I'll share stuff from Newt Gingrich. I don't agree with everything Newt Gingrich says, but when they're right, they're right. Same with Mark Levin. I don't always agree with Mark Levin, and I think he's being a complete wuss for not debating Dr. Tom Woods. But when it comes to other issues, he's right on, and so I will listen to him because he can give me analysis and share information. So you don't have to agree with everything that Trog and I say. You don't have to like our style. I mean, you know, he cussed first this week, but usually it's me. But the idea is you want to get people to think differently. No, we don't. We don't even have a delay. Come on, man. This is shoestring technology here. And even if we did, do you think I'd remember to hit it? So the point is that you got to get the information out there so people think differently, because otherwise good people who are conservative, who are American patriots, who have free market tendencies and libertarian ideas and classical liberal like our founding fathers, you know, are busy with their lives, their businesses, their jobs, their kids, their families, and so they might tune into the Fox noise for an hour a day and get the neocon bullshit fed to them, and then they think that the next candidate that needs to be elected is Mitch McConnell or, you know, John Boehner. Yeah, he screwed up a few things, but overall he's a good little orange dude. Or, hey, you know what, Jeb Bush, he doesn't sound so bad for president. That's the kind of crap that happens. You have to expose these sycophants. Because that's what they are. They kiss ass to the seat of power, and then they go back home, and they talk to you in your language and tell you what you want to hear so that you give them money, and you go out there and knock on doors and bust your ass to get them elected. And then they get into Washington, D.C., and they bend over and give whichever president, doesn't matter if it's a Democrat or Republican, give everything that they want They might bitch about it on TV, but they really give them everything that they want. It's a sick, sick game. And the only way you stop it is to get that information out there. So if you're listening right now, whether live or in broad replay, just go below the scrolling graphics and you click download and you get an MP3. You can play that in your MP3-enabled device. You can send somebody an email. You can burn a CD, take it to your Campaign for Liberty meetings, your Tea Party meetings, Republican Party meetings, AA meetings. Just get it out there. Tell people about the show. When you see us out there on Facebook or Twitter or anywhere on the Internet, just, you know, like it, but also share it. If you like it, that's wonderful because feedback lets us know that you like what we're doing. But you got to get it into other people's hands. And if you just share it with the same six people you know on Facebook who already like the show, that really won't help. You got to throw a bigger net out there. And also remember that any time you need your Liberty Thunder fix, we broadcast live, 9 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday and Thursday. And on Thursday, we added Thursday so that we can open up the lines in the second hour for call-ins, so call in on Thursday. But anytime you need it, just go to Blog Talk Radio, search out Liberty Thunder. Right there on our page, every show is listed. You just click on the title, it's a hyperlink, and it plays right in your browser. So you can always share it, you can always listen to it, and you can always pass that information around. Sometimes we get pretty kind of timely with our information, but there is a general theme that's always applicable. And that general theme is, if you want the constitutional republic where all of us, from the president on down, are under the rule of law, then you need to elect men and women into power temporarily to accept the fact that they are there to judge the current times and enact laws that facilitate liberty, human flourishing, and security within the framework of the Constitution, not outside of it. And don't think for a second that one party or the other is better for this or better for that. Both of them suck. The Republicans suck slightly less, not because of people like McConnell and Boehner. They suck slightly less because of you, because of the Tea Party that's risen up in the last 5 years and the Liberty Movement, who's put people in office like Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Trey Gowdy and Louis Gohmert. That's why it sucks less. But they're still the minority, and we need to get more of them in there. Isn't that kind of the name of the game, Chris, to just get more real candidates who actually believe in the things the Republican Party says it stands for? Lower taxes, smaller government, constitutional order and rule of law, a strong defense, which doesn't mean blowing up the world. Isn't that what we want? Is it? Maybe you don't want that. Do you want that? All right. Well, all right. So in simple terms, if you want this country
I was on
to,
mute.
Obviously.
I was on mute. I was talking. I couldn't hear you. I was talking away, baby.
None of us heard a
no,
word you said.
What I started out with was, isn't there an election coming up? No. Is anybody paying attention?
Was. There's a primaries, too, starting this week.
Yeah, and the primaries are rocking and rolling, and candidates are out there spinning their spin, and they need to be supported or they need to be, supported against, you know, depending on what your market is. There's no way we can get into all the details of all of it because you got all the House seats are up for reelection and a third of the Senate, which is typical in the way the Senate is done. Every 2 years, the House is up for re-election, which amazes me because we've been re-electing these same a-holes who have been destroying our economy and waging war on the world, known and unknown to people, you know, for 20, 30 years of their career and raising debt ceilings every freaking time. Every time, both parties, both sides, and then they cry if they're John Boehner, or they rant, or they manipulate the words and tell you how they didn't want to do it, but they had to do it because they had hemorrhoids or whatever their freaking excuse is. You know, they had to get back to golf and their parties.
Oh, it looks like John Boehner's trying to call it. John, we don't have time to talk to you now. Sorry, John. No time to talk to you now.
But the frustrating thing, and I know I say this a lot, the frustrating thing is that people don't pay the hell attention. These people only have power because you give them that power. Once they get in there, you can only hope they got some kind of ethics and morals and you know, whatever. But once they're in there, they're kind of out of control unless the whole country rises up, you know, on a major issue like Syria. But, you know, you gotta screen people. You got to figure out what they stand for. You know, what's their record? What's their record in life before they ran, if they're new? Or, you know, who are their association? What do they believe in? What don't they believe in? You know, and vote better people in. Never in the history of our country, Rex, from my research, have we re-voted in the same a-holes over and over and over again than in the last 20-plus years. Because sure. Usually in our founding fathers, I don't think they ever thought we would have career politicians, because in those days you didn't make anything. You got a pittance, you know, mm-hmm. and you usually had a life and a business and a farm and a shipping industry and a factory that you had to run. So your goal was to serve and get the hell home and take care yep. of your business. That was how this country was founded. I don't think our founding fathers got it. Now, maybe if they would have looked at Rome in all aspects, I think they did pretty good for what they had, but I think they could have seen career politicians in Rome. And maybe they should have embedded better laws, but I just don't think our founding fathers thought anybody would be stupid enough to work for free and be permanent.
I think that they probably saw that, knowing that men were corrupt, and they put some checks in places and kind of made it unappealing. What they didn't see, this is what they didn't see. I think they saw that. What they didn't see, they didn't expect that our moral culture would be so decadent and hedonistic. That's what they didn't expect.
Good point.
And so I think that the rules work for, and look, John Adams said it. The Constitution is for a moral and religious people and woefully inadequate for any other. So they didn't see that we would be this decadent. Now, some of you less than hardcore conservatives, maybe more libertarian tendency, would think, well, but morality has nothing to do with it. Well, we're not talking about morality in a religious sense. We're talking about morality in the sense of the natural law. In other words, understanding who people are, what man's end is, and the fact that we are social beings. So we need each other, but we also need to maximize our individual creativity, which requires liberty. And then for some of you Christians out there, you tend to think that unless somebody believes in your particular brand of Christianity, then they're heathens and therefore not worthy of your time, and some of you don't even vote. That's as much of a problem as the other side. The fact is, we are a plural culture, and religious freedom was the principal reason that people came to this country to worship as they believe, but with a common good, a common understanding of what is good, and a common understanding of what liberty means, and a common understanding of morality in the order of the natural law. Without that, without that objective order, then everybody's opinion matters, and then there's nothing to keep all of us organized together and free. It suddenly devolves into chaos, and then it becomes whoever has the strongest opinion, or whoever can sway the most people, or whoever has the biggest club. So that's the balance I think our founding fathers found, Chris, but I just don't think that they expected us to be having debates about whether you can force a baker to bake a penis cake for a gay wedding, or that you would teach children about sodomy in kindergarten, or that the number one thing on television would be the friggin' Oscars, or Kim Kardashian's ass, or some other reality TV. These are the things that they didn't envision, and so I think that that's probably why. Because what's happened here, and you pointed out, why are we electing like 95% of the same assholes in every election as we bitch about them? Because everybody says Washington sucks. Congress has the lowest ratings, but my guy's okay. Well, is your guy okay simply because he brought a shitload of money from D.C. back to your district? Because if that's how you measure if he's okay or not okay, then What happens when the other guys get more money, and what happens when there's no money left? See, you're not thinking clearly if that's why you think your guy is good. But the prominent reason, I think, Chris, is that because, like you say, almost every episode, people are not involved in politics as citizens. They look at it as spectators on American Idol.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, name recognition wins. So that's why you get
insane?
Another Bush and another Clinton and another Bush. It's nuts. Believe it or not, we've almost burned. Good.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, we've almost burned an hour. I don't know how that happens every week. Yeah, believe it. Well, we've got 12 minutes at the top of the hour, so let's do this. We got a 12-minute clip, but I think it's a pretty good one. It's a little bit of Mark Levin. And again, like I told you before, I don't always agree with Mark Levin, but when he's right, he's right, and I'll listen to him. A little bit of Mark Levin, a little bit of Ted Cruz, and I think it's important to play it for two reasons. One, Mark Levin is technically now the media, right, broadcast radio, and Cruz is a current citizen statesman because he's currently the junior senator from Texas, and it's also important because Mark Levin was involved in the Tea Party movement early on, and Ted mm-hmm. Cruz is only senator because of the Tea Party movement and Rand Paul and Sarah Palin and people like Mark Levin. That's the only reason that he's a senator. So I think as we're in the area of around the fifth anniversary of this current incarnation of the Tea Party movement, it's a good idea for us to listen to this so that we understand what the media is supposed to do and what a statesman is supposed to do, because I think Levin and Cruz are both exemplify that. So you got to want to comment on something, or should we just roll in?
Give her hell.
All right, here we go. It's a 12-minute clip, but pay attention because it's really good. There's a lot of good points in here about how we can get things to where they need to be.
At my signal, unleash hell.
You. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered, yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. And triumph we must, and triumph we will. Now, my dear friend Jeffrey Lord, both of us worked in the Reagan administration, so we're fond of quoting the great Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was fond of quoting Thomas Paine, those exact words that I just read to you. And he would recite them, campaign stop after campaign stop, whether he was running in the Republican primaries or running in the general election. You see, Ronald Reagan was not part of the establishment. He was an outsider. And like you and so many others throughout history, he had the courage to stand up and be counted. And for this, also like you, Reagan and his supporters were disparaged and dismissed by the same ruling class. And I'll give you a few examples. George Will, 1974. Reagan is 63, and he looks it. His hair is still remarkably free of gray, but around the mouth and neck, he looks like an old man. He has never demonstrated substantial national appeal. His hardcore support today consists primarily of the kamikaze conservatives who thought the 1960 Goldwater campaign was jolly fun. And there is reason to doubt that Reagan is well suited to appeal to the electorate that just produced a Democratic landslide. George Will. Chuck Percy, former Republican senator from Illinois. A Reagan nomination and the crushing defeat likely to follow could signal the beginning of the end of our party as an effective force in American life. He said Reagan is far out of the centrist mainstream. The hell is the centrist mainstream anyway? I used to think it was the Constitution. I used to think it was free markets. I used to think it was private property rights. Apparently that's now right wing. John Rhodes, who would become the Republican leader of the always in the minority Republicans in the House at that time. He said as soon as Reagan gets away from his cliches and his campaign slogans, he's in trouble. Nelson Rockefeller, who leads the current Republican Party, I think, he warned Republican governors in terms of Reagan's run that no major American party can long endure by directing its appeal to a narrow minority. It will not serve the nation to have our major parties polarized at ideological extremes. Does this not sound familiar to you? So damn many of these, I could go on all day.
5 years ago, President Obama was newly elected. We were seeing the explosion of government power, and we were seeing all of the voices telling the American people, abandon hope, all ye who enter here. The country is now a liberal, progressive utopia, and the American people have no interest in changing. And then the Tea Party rocketed into existence, starting with one rant on television. Millions of men and women rose up. Now think for a second what an extraordinary development that is. I think the Tea Party is the most exciting political development in decades in this country. And all of you know, look, the great thing about the Tea Party is it arose from the people. It's not top-down, which, by the way, confuses the heck out of politicians. There's a game in Washington. It's not complicated. If there's any new force in town, you just go and take whoever the poobah is, and you co-opt them. It's a game Washington is very, very good at. The fantastic thing about the Tea Party, look, I remember running for office in 2011, 2012 in Texas. And people ask, well, how do you get Tea Party support? You know, who do I go to see? And the simple truth, as you know, look, in the state of Texas, there are several hundred Tea Party leaders. You want to get Tea Party support? You know what? You're going to put some miles on your car. You're going to drive from town to town, and you're going to sit down in a lot of IHOPs. You're going to sit down in a lot of VFW halls. And you're going to answer questions. You're not going to give a canned stump speech and walk away, because if you do that, you're done. Look, the great thing about the Tea Party is it's citizens who view it. If they've got a candidate who's running, they view it as a job interview, which is exactly what it is. And you look at the movement, the organic movement that arose, and what are the issues? What are the issues that drive the Tea Party? Now, if you listen to the mainstream media, they always manage, if there's a rally with 5 or 10,000 people, they find the one guy in the back with a tinfoil hat. And that's what everyone's for. And you know, look, I agree, Martians reading our brainwaves would be a bad thing. But I'm going to suggest maybe the Tea Party's about something a little more fundamental. Tea Party is about a couple of very simple principles. Number one, liberty. Free market principles, limited government, not bankrupting our kids and grandkids, and getting back to the Constitution of the United States of America. Hands down, the most exciting and the most important thing that has happened in politics in recent years has been the rise of the grassroots. Has been the rise of millions of Americans standing up saying, we're going to hold Washington accountable. We're going to get back to the principles that made America the greatest nation in the history of the world. And let me tell you, look, it is easy at times to look at the expansion of government power, at the lawlessness, and to be demoralized. I want to tell you more than anything else, I want to share a word of encouragement. I am hopeful, I am optimistic, I am filled with the promise that we're going to turn this country around because there is a grassroots revolution sweeping this country.
What really bothers me about this, Senator Ted Cruz, is this. I heard Mitch McConnell about 3 weeks ago on the Fox News Channel with Chris Wallace say, this is where we're going to draw the line in so many words. No, there's not going to be, and I don't even like this phrase, clean debt ceiling. Nothing clean about this. There isn't going to be this debt ceiling vote unless something's done about spending. And 3 weeks later, You're the bad guy for requiring a roll call vote on this 60-vote rule. And I'm thinking to myself, we have another debt ceiling vote coming up in March of 2015. When will the Republican leadership, when will the Republican apparatus make the case to the American people, start now, to explain why their entire future is at stake if we vote for these things, if you vote for these things, without making even an attempt to dent the debt?
And the answer, unfortunately, is never. If we wait on Washington, if we wait on the entrenched politicians in Washington to make the case to stand up, hell will freeze over before that happens. But you know what? This is nothing new. That's true of entrenched power. It's always been true of Washington. And I think the answers don't come from the Washington, D.C. Beltway. The answer is going to come from America, from millions of people standing up and holding elected officials accountable.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're right. And I think what you're trying to do is save the Republican Party. I think what you're trying to do is remake the Republican Party so it's more responsive. It's not so Washington-centric. And for that, you're being attacked by this entrenched ruling class. That's how I observe it. Am I right or wrong?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You remember just a few months ago when we were fighting, trying to stop the disaster that is Obamacare, where a lot of the Washington graybeards, they said, oh, you're so foolish.
Hold on now, I have a gray beard.
We're going to fight on the debt ceiling. That's where the fight will be. Look, I got to tell you, I recently had my staff print out a list of 3 pages of Republican senators, I might note, all the people that are running around the press saying nasty things about me, saying, we will stand on the debt ceiling and fight for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few months later, it's like they think the American people are just a bunch of rubes, that we don't remember what they say. And what drives them crazy, if you get outside of Washington, if you ask any American, Republican, Democrat, Independent, Libertarian, should we live within our means? Should we stop racking up massive debts that are bankrupting our kids? The answer is, of course. I mean, this is not a partisan issue. This is basic common sense. And every one of those senators who's angry, when they go back home, they tell their constituents they're doing everything they can to stop it. But they don't actually want to do what they're saying. If 41 Republicans had stood together and just voted no, the clean debt ceiling, the blank check that President Obama and Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi want, would have been denied. And for all of them that say, oh, well, you're just a crazy rebel. Look, the last 55 times the debt ceiling has been increased, Congress has attached meaningful conditions to it 28 of those times. You want a demonstrated method, the only leverage point that has consistently been effective. If you look at Graham Rudman, one of the most effective laws we've had for reining in government spending, it came through the debt ceiling. If you look at the Budget Control Act, which I might note, the Senate Republican leader, Mitch McConnell, has gone on great lengths how the Budget Control Act was this great act of virtue and principle. Now, they just threw it all overboard about a month ago, but right up until that point, it was a great act of virtue and principle. That came on the debt ceiling. What did we have to do something else like that? Actually have 41 of the Republicans stand together and say, no, Mr. President, we will not give you a blank check above 17 without meaningful reforms to stop the problem. The Republicans didn't want to do that, but they wanted to tell their constituents they had, and that's why they're very angry right now.
Bye-bye, boys!
Have fun storming the castle!
There you have it. That was Senator Ted Cruz and Mark Levin. By the way, we're going to be having a contest next month. Whoever gets the most listeners, new listeners to the show, will get a free tinfoil hat. We will ship it to you flat, some assembly required. What I found interesting about that was quite a lot of information there, but you notice that in the beginning there, Levin was reading from the, quote, conservative media of the late 70s. And who were they attacking as the crazy wacko bird, tinfoil hat wearing kook who couldn't
get anything done, that was Ronald Reagan. And, of course, now the Republican Party just invokes Reagan every step they can. Shit, even Obama won his election by quoting and running as Ronald Reagan the first time around. So it shows you that this, quote, new civil war going on in the Republican Party, these infiltrators from the right, these crazy, wacko libertarian kids, and these anarchist legislative arsonist teabaggers from the right are infiltrating. No, it's real simple. We are the ones who actually stand for the things that the Republican Party for the last 40 years has alleged to stand for. The problem is that the paradigm in this country has shifted so far to the left. And remember that the far left is total government power, and the far right is the absence of any government at all. And we are slightly to the left of the far right. That's where the republic is. That's where we are. But the conversation has moved so far to the left that we seem like, quote, extremists. We're not the extremists. We're the ones calling for sanity. They're the extremists. You know, and then you heard the whole, you know, debt ceiling row where, you know, Ted Cruz is the bad guy. Well, Ted Cruz only did, A, what the people of Texas elected him to do, and B, what the Republicans said they were going to do. So how is he the bad guy? Oh, because he exposed Mitch McConnell and John Crony Cornyn because they had to vote for cloture. They didn't have to vote for it. They could have, you know, they always call for party unity when they want you to get behind their friggin' rhino, but what happens when a conservative like Ted Cruz asks for party unity to not give an imperial president dipshit like the one we have a blank check? They even use the language that the left has devised, which is clean debt ceiling. And as Levin said, there's nothing clean about it, and as Ted Cruz called it, it's a blank check. So from now until March of next year, Obama can borrow as much as he wants, putting you and your children and their children in hock for generations to fund his stupid initiatives, and the Republicans are the ones who did it. They could have stopped it, but they chose not to. Now, does it make sense to not raise the debt ceiling? Well, unless you're phasing out the Federal Reserve, no, you probably will raise it, but you can at least get some concessions, some spending reform. What did they do instead? Mr. Conservative Ayn Rand Paul Ryan got you a budget that blew through sequester, which is the only limits on spending we've seen since Gingrich was Speaker. And the Republicans blew that open and then passed a gigantic farm bill, and now they've erased the debt ceiling. That's Mitch McConnell's idea. You really want that guy to be the Senate Majority Leader? I mean, he'll be just as bad as Harry Reid, you know? So what do you do? Do you go run to the Libertarian Party or the Constitution Party? I mean, look, those are fine organizations, and, you know, once they get some delegates and some senators at the state level, maybe a governorship or two, maybe they can be players. But right now, you have a duopoly. What does that mean? That means that the Democrats and the Republicans own every single precinct and all the ballot access rules in every state. There is no shot for an alternate party. But there is a real shot for a real third party, and that third party is the conservative libertarian wing of the GOP. Make that wing bigger. Take over. You want to blow open the ballot access rules in the precincts? Fine, you can do that. Work on it from the state level and then get some national help. But until you take over the GOP, that's not going to happen. Now, we didn't want the debt ceiling raised. Did anybody do anything about it? You bet. Ted Cruz did. And it wasn't just some kind of showboat thing. If the Republicans had actually voted with him, then they would have gotten it. Because Obama's a weak wuss, and he would have eventually had to cave. Might there have been another government shutdown? Who knows? The fact is that Clinton was a smarter, more capable, more liked, and more powerful president than this wuss, and Gingrich made him come to his terms. This guy is even easier to push around like that. The only reason he's getting away with what he's getting away with is because the Republicans are weaker. They're squishes. They're weak. They're the Democrat wing of the Republican Party. So, you know, we need more Ted Cruz's. We need more Rand Pauls. Am I right, Chris? Isn't that the name of the game, to populate the GOP with real conservatives and real libertarians this year?
I think that was an amazing clip. It made me feel so much better. It calmed me down. I think that people need to study pre-Reagan history. And I know we talk about know your history because everybody's freaking out. Everybody's getting bombarded by the liberal media, which is all of them, including Fox News. And there's a few good people on there, but for the most part, they challenge very little. They don't expose the deep, dark, key truth to what is broken in the federal government. You know, they love to spin the spin, you know, like to scare you so you'll watch them more and listen to their pundits get together in their little four-man groups and analyze everything. You know, I mean, if you think that information's good, then we're in trouble. But if you look at it and you can decipher through it and realize we're not talking about the important things here, we're not talking about the key things here. Study history. Pre-Reagan was a mess. Actually, let's go back. When Nixon got ousted, the Republican Party was 17% of the country. That's how dejected the party was and people were. And when Reagan came in, he won all but one state one time. Okay? He beat an incumbent president, which is very difficult to do. That's why Romney lost. It's very difficult to do, and you don't do it being a wussy and agreeing with everything, only saying, I would do more of that. Oh, yeah, I agree with that, but I'd do it bigger. Oh, my God. I cannot believe he was our candidate. I'm sorry. I know he's a nice guy, and he's a great family man. He's a great husband, whatever. As far as somebody to defeat somebody as popular as Obama, regardless of how poor his policies are, because he spent 4 years blaming Bush and blaming the Republicans, there's a lot of people didn't believe it. So here we are. You've got to study history. How did the Republican Party rebuild itself? Well, it started with Goldwater. And yeah, he rocked and rolled, but the rhinos freaked the hell out and helped defeat him. I mean, I don't think people understand this. If anybody studies our last primary, you'll realize that rhinos help defeat good people so that they could get their guy in there, and then he could lose to Obama. Well, if you go back to the Goldwater era when he won the primary, the rhinos walked away. They just pulled their support all across the country. He had nothing but the grassroots, which was a whole different era. It didn't have the, you know, social media and all things we have today. And they walked away to let him lose because they're sore losers. They're a-holes. And they've been like this forever. Go back in history. Go back to Rockefeller. He was all part of that. Then you jump forward into the Reagan era, and when he finally came up, he was a populist movement. He was a Tea Party movement. And it was a foundation that was started during a losing election with Goldwater. But by the time the country was bleeding on the ground in its death throes, along came Reagan. And then we dip back down, and then while the country's in the coming up on this popular socialist globalist president, Bill Clinton, you know, he had the Gingrich Revolution, and Gingrich had taken and learned from the Reagan Revolution, and they built the, you know, the Republican, the Opportunity Movement, and educating, you know, and building the party, rebuilding it all throughout the states, at the state level, at the local level, and they built a winning strategy and brought the Republicans back into power for the first time in like 60-some years. And so each one of these successes came right after a crushing defeat, and it came after the power brokers, the Roves, the Romneys, the RNC, all trying to defeat who? You, Joe and Mary voter. And that's so important to understand that, because sometimes it can just go, God, how can we beat these guys? I mean, Rove had like a 3% success rate and spent ungodly tens of millions of other people's dollars to lose like $300 million or some ridiculous figure like that. And yet there he is, right back at Fox News as the resident expert, the architect. And anybody with a brain knows he's a Democrat operative, and he has wasted hundreds of millions of dollars of other people's money to fail, and he's considered the expert at Fox. You have to capture these moments in your mind and realize what you're dealing with. There's only one way that the American people, forget the Tea Party, forget conservatives, the American people, there's only one way you're going to get your country back. And that's to get freaking involved. Educate yourself on the people who are running. Back the people who stand for the things you believe in. Back them hard, because they're going to get attacked by our own side. And back them and back them and back them and back them. Cruz is a classic example. He came from nowhere. He was way behind in the polls. Nobody knew him. He was kind of brash, you know. And he went out there and he hit the streets and he met with people and they rose up behind him, and Sarah Palin came in and, you know, Rand endorsed him, and next thing you know, pow, there he was. And look at the mess he's caused. Thank God. You know?
Well, I don't like it. It's pretty rough. And, you know, how can he get along with anybody?
What the hell is wrong with people? Get along with who? A bunch of crooks who are destroying our country. Waging war in 100 places around the world. Do you even know all the places that bullets are flying because of the U.S. government? Do you even know? Is there anybody to even call and say, hey, why are we in this country? Why are we in the Ukraine? Why do we spend $5 billion trying to topple a sovereign nation? Why are we poking the bear in the butt with a sharp stick? Why are we trying to cause World War III? Why are we in 100 places in Africa? Why are we toppling countries in Africa? Do you even know? Have you even picked up the internet and looked and researched it and said, wow, that really sucks. That's my country doing that. What the hell are they doing? And why did I just get a bunch of tax increases so I could fund this crap? This isn't the will of the people. It's not even for you. That's the part that pisses me off, okay? It's not even for you. There's three key things the federal government's supposed to do. Secure our borders. Are they doing it? Frick no. All right? Second thing. Okay, I'm all right. Okay, put the club down. You know, secure your freedoms. Are they doing it? No. My God, every one of our Bill of Rights freedoms right now are under attack. And what are the Republicans doing? Well, you know, we're going to have another committee meeting on it. Are you freaking kidding me? The IRS, the AP scandal, Benghazi, Fast and Furious, Libya. You know, we blew up another sovereign nation. Why? Does anybody even know why? I do, because he refused to freaking buy into the IMF bank. That's why. He was building his own banking system. Oh, my God, we can't have that. You know, what the hell is – would you really think the Ukraine is about the Ukrainian people? My God, does anybody even know where the Ukraine is on a map before last week? Do you even care? Do you know how many Russians live in Ukraine? Do you understand that Russia has a freaking military base in Crimea? Crimea. You know? I mean, come
on.
It
is a Crimea. The Crimea is a Crimea.
Crimea. I know, I read too many freaking what's his name? Arnold Schwarzenegger. Conan books. You know, do you even understand? I mean, when you look at Nuland, there's a video that if the Republicans had half a brain instead of attacking Putin for trying to protect his backyard, and people, a third of the country are Russians, you know, he gave them $3 billion, and the U.S. funded a freaking revolution against a sovereign nation, against a legally elected country, and they used neo-Nazis to do it. Do you even know history, how many Russians died in the Nazi war? 20 million. They're not really excited about Nazis. That's who the U.S. backed to go in there to destroy. You know why they did it? Because the last one they funded, the Orange Revolution, didn't work, and the people rose up and voted in a new government. And that didn't fit the U.S., EU, IMF. We got to get them in debt to the EU. You know, oh, they'll have a better life under the EU. Horseshit. Has anybody ever studied anything up and down the coast, up and down the Eastern Bloc, old USSR countries, to see how their life is after being involved with the EU? It's about one thing, debt control and weakening the borders of Russia. That's all it's about. It's not about the people. It's and they bleed their resources off. I mean, most people don't study crap about history. It's all, oh, my God, Putin's an evil guy. You know why he's an evil guy in our Western media? Because when he took over after Yeltsin, who was a Western puppet, he was a Western puppet, all of the natural resources in Russia were bled off for Western corporations. Do you know that people, that Russian government owed U.S. oil companies money for U.S. companies to come into Russia and take their oil? You know why they're pissed at Putin? Because he kicked them out and took control of his own damn country back and said, whoa, I'm going to, that's our oil. Why in the hell are we not making any money? We got people starving. They were, a million people a year were dying in post-USSR fall. A million. And Yeltsin gave the country away. To over 200 major manufacturing companies were just totally gone. The money was gone, trillions of dollars. Putin comes in. Is he a strong arm? Yeah, he is. But what he did was he took care of Russia, and the EU and the U.S. are pissed off because he paid off all the old European IMF debt. He paid it all off. Russia has like a 5 to 8% debt to GDP. How'd you like USA right now to have a 5 to 8% debt to GDP? They're pissed because he paid off the debt. He kicked out all the Europeans and all the socialists and all the world order, you know, whatever you want to call them, you know, Masons, Illuminati, I don't care, whatever. Whatever fits your conspiracy theory. But he kicked the bankers out, and he rebuilt his country. And they've never been happy about that. And so now we got to invade another frickin' sovereign nation. And you know why, honestly? Probably because they beat us with gold medals. But outside of that, you know why? So that it would distract you, and you would start thinking that Fox and the rest of these so-called conservative commentators are your buddies because they're talking about the evil Putin. You know, can you even name the last country that Russia has invaded since Putin's been in power?
South Ossetia.
Zero! How many countries has the U.S. invaded in that time? Do you even know?
Four.
And
five.
He's the bad guy? Oh, how about hundreds if you count all the smaller
seven.
Conflicts?
Eight. I'm sorry, you know? I'm still counting.
Make a list. And so he's the bad guy? What the hell are we doing in the Ukraine? You know, and so everybody's all focused. I go around the social sites. I'm just losing it, man. I go around these sites going, are you freaking people insane? Look what the crap you're passing on. Do you even know where it's at on a map? Oh, somewhere in Europe. Yeah, kind of. How many Russians live in the Ukraine? Like a third. Where's all the export in the industry go out of the Ukraine? Over 60% of it goes to Russia. What happened between the EU and Russia in that deal that caused this revolution? Russia put $15 billion on the table and said, just stay, you know, just here. We'll lend you $15 billion. We'll cut your gas prices in half. And you can do what you want. We'll help you. You know what? The EU came along with this massive list of rules and regulations, including you got to pass gay marriage. And we're going to give you about $160 million a month, which barely pays the interest on their debt. They're failing as a country. Russia, because you know why? Debt-free company. They got a $500 million laying there in a trust fund that they can spend on anything they want. We got to print our money because we got a crooked freaking government. And so they come
what?
Along. Yeah, no kidding. And they come along and they look at the EU deal going, whoa, we can't meet this, and you're not giving us enough money. We need more money. We're failing. Our economy, all their short-term bonds were due. And Russia turned around and said, here, we'll help you out. And they did it. And so we caused a revolution because, oh, my God, the IMF and the EU didn't get to steal another Eastern Bloc country against the Great Bear, the cold, evil Soviet Empire. Wait, that's not around anymore. And this is what people are focused on. These freaking people are going to destroy this country. Has anybody studied the fall of Rome, Rex? We talk about it every damn show. Has anybody ever looked at all the shit that was going on in Rome and how crooked it was and how corrupt it was and how people voted for senators who would give them more wheat and more land, and all the contracts were all tied to the government, so you had to vote in your senator so that he would give you the contract so you could make your fortune. And then when they ran out of money, they started taking the money and started adding cheap metals to it to devalue the money to make it spread more, and they'd hand out more of it, and people would go, oh, aren't you great? You just gave us 10 million more, whatever they call them in those days. You know better than I do. And then they would go, shit, man, we're in trouble. So they'd launch another war, and then another war, and then another war, and they bled that country to death, and the Gauls walked in and sacked them, a city that had never been sacked. That is the USA today. And you're worried about what Putin didn't do in a country that is totally intertwined into their economy and their past? You know, I can't believe the shit I hear on the radio. Putin is invading Ukraine. And I'm going, no, he hasn't. He has a military base on Crimea. You know, his people have set not one boot across the table. His Congress said, if we got Russians in this place, we got neo-Nazis. Remember the Nazis killed 20 million Russians? They're a little nervous. We got people dying. We got cops that had Molotov cocktails that were made like napalm thrown on them. Hear that in the Western media? No. Buildings burned down in downtown Kiev. Hear that in the media? No. All you hear about is, oh, that one cop beat that guy up. Oh, but the three cops behind him that are on fire from napalm, you don't get that in the screen in Western media. You do in European news, you know? And here we are, all caught up in this crap going, Putin bad, U.S. good, Putin bad, U.S. good. Yeah, invade, NATO, rah, rah. What about the crooks who are destroying our country?
They're the ones calling for the war. They're the ones calling for the war.
On both sides. On both
neocons,
and a lot of people who I thought were conservatives with a brain that are caught up in this crap, which tells me they really want a war because we're broke, just like Rome. What's the next step? Big ass war. Need a war. Got to have a war.
Yeah, they need one.
Got to blow shit up. Got to invade countries.
There always has to be a war when you're. Fiat paper money scheme has collapsed, and that is what this is about. Look, you know, the psychological treatment of ginning up the jingoism, and also it has been shown that a war mentality gets people to unite and focus and are willing to give up liberty for so-called security and rah-rah-rah nationalism masked as patriotism. And that's always been the case. Have you noticed that not only do we have wars, you know, perpetually in the 20th century, starting with the Spanish-American War at the end of the one before that, and then, you know, World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, war, and when they run out of actual places to invade, what do? We need a war on drugs. We need a war on poverty. We need a war on a war on everything, because a war mentality gets you to stop thinking and just start taking orders from your generals. Your generals, who are a bunch of pink-pantied wusses, who never set foot on a battlefield. Granted, Jihad Jane McHammed did in fact set foot on a battlefield because he got shot down in Vietnam, but usually the people who fought in wars are the ones who are most against it. That guy went the other way and wants to blow up the world. Trog, that was one hell of a role, and I'm impressed. You mentioned a couple of things. The first thing you mentioned was Conan,
what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women.
That is good.
Now,
that is good.
If you're going to play at being an empire, then, I mean, I don't want to be an empire, but if you're going to play at it, then at least do it right. You know, an empire basically uses its military might to plunder and control the world, and the citizens of the empire benefit from all the booty. Unfortunately, we're being used as an empire, so we got all the problems and costs of an empire, but we get none of the benefits. I mean, we invade Iraq, we get none of the oil. We invade Afghanistan, we don't get any of the opium. The CIA gets it all. We invade Africa, we don't get any of the gold or the diamonds. It's insane. If you're going to invade these countries and take their resources, at least give it back to the people who funded the war and the people whose children were sacrificed in it. But that's not how it works. And that's the fundamental problem with these pseudo-empire morons who simply want to use us and our country and our good name to plunder and control the world. And that's what this is about. Now, you mentioned the Ukraine and the Crimea. How is this foreign policy issue relevant to 2014? Well, all the points that Trog just made are very key. Most Americans are woefully ignorant about what's going on over there, especially since we've kind of been playing catch-up and misinformation on Muslim jihadis, the Shia-Sunni conflict, and various parts of the Middle East and the transition area in Asia to the Far East. And now all of a sudden, here is, you know, this where is this Ukraine? Well, it's on the Black Sea. It's not that far north of Syria. And so if we couldn't destabilize Syria and topple Assad in order to Putin's ass through the Caucasus, maybe we do it through the Ukraine. You see, remember that John Boehner, Jiajane McCamad, Mitch McConnell, Barack Obama, the Nobel Peace Prize laureate, had a hard-on for invading Syria. And the American people, from the far left to the far right and everyone in between, said, F no. Oh, I'm going to go anyway. Oh, really? You can't do that, Mr. Commander-in-Chief, because we have been invaded by Syria. You need congressional authorization, and he knew he wasn't going to be able to get it because John Boehner couldn't whip up his caucus. So they abandoned that idea. Now they're doing it clandestinely. So we need another conflict. And this is what this is about. So how does it play into there? Well, it plays into there that the party of D.C. is the war party. It's the fiat money war party. And the only ones who are willing to do anything about it are conservatives. Now, does this mean that we should just sit back and let Putin do whatever the hell he wants? No, but as long as Putin is operating within his sphere, his interests, protecting his people, and keep in mind, as Trog told you, the people that live in East Ukraine are Russians. They're Putin's responsibility. Then, you know, we got nothing to say about it. Now, if he decides to start going around the world screwing up things that don't belong to him, then maybe we have something to say. We'll be hypocrites, because that's what we're doing, but at least it would be the right thing to do. But nevertheless, Ukraine, that's not our bag. That is not our bag. And actually, Putin, again, is being handed a diplomatic and probably a military victory by the incompetence of the neocons and Obama. When I say neocons, I'm talking about the Democrat neocons and the Republican neocons. Neocons are lefties, globalist lefties who infiltrated the Republican Party. We got about 30 minutes live left at the top of the hour. Blog Talk Radio will cut you off if you're listening in your browser. The only way you will be able to listen to the show live is by calling in 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013, and you can listen on your phone. Or you can just catch us in archive. Remember, all the shows, including this one, are available on our Blog Talk Radio page. Just go to Blog Talk Radio, search out Liberty's Thunder, and they're all right there. Just hit the title, which is a hyperlink, and it plays right in your browser. How does this tie in? It ties in. What's that?
I needed to clarify something because somebody asked a question in chat. I'm sorry.
Go for it.
I don't know who in the hell is telling anybody anywhere that Putin's invaded anything. He hasn't invaded anything. There are no boots on the ground from Russian troops. Now there's boots on the ground all around it because they've got they got 7.6 million Russians in Ukraine they're concerned about. Okay, but the only place that there are boots on the ground of Russian troops is in the base on the peninsula. That's it. So anybody who's told you anything otherwise is flat out lying. I've been tracking this thing day in and day out since it started. What they're afraid of is that Putin's going to go in there and do exactly what he has the right to do, and that's protect the Russians in there, which really kind of means that eastern Ukraine is going to end up split, which it probably is anyway, because those people don't want a bunch of neo-Nazis to control them. And they're not interested in the IMF and the EU. Never have been.
And the debt.
Why the hell would you connect yourself to a failing EU when all your trade and your culture and your religious connections are all right here to the east with a country that's debt-free?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. This stuff is
makes
just
no
blows,
sense.
Blows me away. And then down
well,
on the peninsula, let me finish one other thing.
Down on
the peninsula, those people, that is an autonomous area, that Crimea, okay? That is not a Ukrainian. It's kind of like the Virgin Islands is kind of ours, but not really ours, okay? You know, that kind of thing. And they, the people, not Putin, the people said, we've had enough of this crap with the Ukraine, and we're going autonomous, and we're going to take back over control of our land, and we're going to be separate. That they made that decision. So, and then, of course, somehow, if you listen to all the Western media, they're going to say, well, Putin did that. They're all Russians anyway. What the heck do you expect them to do? What would you do if you had a bunch of crazy neo-Nazis over there that just fell a legitimate government, and you're going, man, every 10 years we got the U.S. in here trying to cause a revolution. You know what? We're our own country. We were in the past. Screw them. That's what they said. Okay?
Yep.
I hope that helps.
Well,
anyway, go ahead.
Well,
I'm sorry.
But, I mean, let's put it this way. Even if, quote, Putin did invade the Ukraine, right? Let's just say he did, right?
Which
well,
he hasn't.
How is that something that we should be – first of all, if in the same week that this commander-in-chief – this is what happens when you get an incompetent community organizer elected your commander-in-chief, you friggin' fools who elected him twice, right? This is what
oh,
happens.
Oh, my God.
You state publicly that you are going to cut your troop size down to pre-World War II levels, and then you poke a finger in the Russian bear's eyes. That's stupid. Not only that, but then you got G.I. Jane McHammed running out there going, we're going to impose sanctions on Putin. Are you frigging kidding? He has an 8% debt-to-GDP ratio. We have a 110% debt-to-GDP ratio, and you're going to impose economic sanctions on Russia? Are you stupid? The only
Here's
thing
the
that
one
makes
I
sense
like.
Is that...
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Here's the one I like. The only thing... I mean, if they want it, what are they going to do? Shut off their own gas lines that supply Europe? Over 25 to 30% of Europe buys their gas from Russia. Okay? All those pipelines, which there are hundreds of them, are multi-billion-dollar investments. All those countries and Gazprom and whoever the major corporation is that built those pipelines are joint ventures. So it's not like – it's kind of like we both own this gas, this pipeline, and then Russia supplies gas to these countries. What are they going to do, shut off their own gas? That's how they're going to run sanctions against Putin? I heard this idiot on Fox News this morning – go, you know, talk about this sanction things, and I'm going, how do you sanction them? They don't belong to our banks. They're not part of the IMF. They're not part of the Fed. They don't owe us any money. They have their own banking system. What are you going and then who they trade with, what are you going to do? Go to China and say, don't buy Russia's gas? China never listened to the Iran sanctions. China said, you know
exactly.
What, U.S., play your frickin' games with Iran. We're not interested in your games. That we got to owe our oil from there. And they never frickin' followed the sanctions. Do you think they are now? I mean, if we piss off China, they could dump our debt load and crash our whole economy. We are
yeah,
so
that's
weak.
More of a risk than anything
run
else.
Around, you don't run around the world trying to cause wars and telling other countries how to frickin' run their countries when your country's crumbling, and especially when they're sitting on all your debt and your trade dollars. China's sitting on, what, $3.6 trillion
mm-hmm.
of our trade dollars and not even using. They could just dump it on the market. They would they would devalue our dollar to 10 cents on the dollar in overnight if they wanted to crush us. And we're
the idiots,
people?
Yeah, the idiots ruining our government are acting like a bully. Unfortunately, if you're going to talk shit, you'd better be able
they're
to back
insane.
It up. And we do have the finest, best, most well-trained, and best-equipped military in the world. But
well,
that's changing quickly. Well, I mean, it's still we're still ahead of everybody else considerably. I mean, the Russian stuff is pretty antiquated, but that game is changing. Now, if you're going to cut something, then cut some of your defense boondoggles. You don't cut your military. Now, I don't think that we should have a standing army, but since we don't have a trained militia, you kind of don't have a choice. You have to phase in a trained militia before you phase out the army. And you don't cut your navy, especially if you have interests over the world. So, I mean, two things. If you're going to be an empire, then you better be the biggest, baddest military on the planet and stay that way, which means you need kind of a militaristic society. Or B, how about you stop being a friggin' empire and you start trading with people, because trade engenders stability and lack of war and lack of conflict and lack of violence because everybody's too busy making money. But see, when you're losing because your corporatist scheme, your Keynesian economics, your fiat paper money, your socialist welfare state that's been expanding for so long becomes unsustainable, you have no choice. And this is precisely why the concept of the welfare-warfare state, they tie in together. The more shit that you give away at home, the more you have to plunder from overseas because you're no longer creating wealth. Yeah, because you're not creating. You've stulted and stultified human creativity. So you're not getting a Steve Jobs and a Steve Wozniak developing Apple Computer in their garage because, well, they would have to pay Obamacare taxes, and then they would pay 35% of their income in taxes, and then there's all the regulations, and then, of course, the EPA has to come in and says, what is this silicone stuff you're using? This could be environmentally dangerous for the spotted left-handed blue-eyed salamander in Northern California or some shit like that. So
they're all moving overseas. They've all moved overseas.
Right, because there's better environments to do business in. That's the stupidity of this thing. And the only thing that makes sense is either A, these pink-pantied pussies are completely incompetent, or they're trying to take down the United States from inside. Either way, it's not good for us.
Wasn't that Khrushchev's goal?
Yeah, exactly. He might be winning. We got 21 minutes at the top of the hour. We're going to get through this 8-minute clip, and then we'll roll. This is a little bit of
something. One more thing I want to say, and then I'm done with the Ukraine.
Go.
There's a video that you can watch of Nuland after she went into the Ukraine and set up all these protests and these underworld gentlemen to cause these disruption and to topple this government. Then she comes back, and she's meeting with a bunch of people talking about freedom and human rights and all this crap after she just passed money to the neo-Nazis to do these violent protests. And on the stage with her while she's talking about all this wonderful stuff, and she also admits that the U.S. has spent over $5 billion to cause regime change in the Ukraine. And she also sits there and tells who we want to put in power in that puppet state, which is against the law and against the State Department. Everybody knows the U.S. does it, but it's right there on video. And right next to her on stage is a big old-ass Chevron sign because they want to get in there, topple a government, get in there, and frack on the eastern border of the Ukraine, on Russia's border. I mean, you can't make this crap up, Rex. And what's frustrating to me is not the left, because they're idiots, you know, or stoned or all on prescription meds, is conservatives buying into this crap and repeating this bull crap about what's going on in the Ukraine when it's all, every bit of it is a lie. I have 450, 60 comments, articles, videos, whatever, on the group just on this topic, and it's, that's less than a week, right?
Yeah.
You know? Because you ain't going to get the truth anywhere else. That's why I built my group, is so I have one sane place to actually have conversations and do research and not get sold down the drain and buy into a bunch of lies and be a sheep while my country is burning. Go ahead. I'm done.
Right on.
Screw Ukraine.
You said the group.
Blow it up.
You said the
Go
group.
Go to war with
you
Russia. I want to see their new jet in their brand new SU-35 in motion anyway. Go for it, Obama.
Yeah, real good. And, of course, you know, put your women on the front line so that you annihilate your girls as well as your boys. You mentioned the group. The group that Chris is talking about is Liberty's Talk on Facebook. Liberty's Talk on Facebook. Just go there. Join the group. It's got large pictures of big topics, and all the articles and comments and clips and discussion is in the comment section. It's very organized. Things don't get pushed down by senseless crap. It's the most organized thing on the most disorganized social media platform that is Fascist Book. And while you're on Facebook, just go to Liberty's Thunder. That's our show page. Click like, right-click on the like button and get notifications, and you will get notifications of when we are broadcasting. And we are generally broadcasting live, 9 p.m. Eastern, Thursday and Sunday. We are not going to be on this Thursday. I'll re-air a show. We may come in with a call-in show on Friday, so watch our page for notifications. That's Liberty's Thunder on Facebook, and we'll generally broadcast Thursday and Sunday, 9 p.m. Now,
before you play the clip, let me throw one thing in.
We're never going to get
no, that. No, I'm done with Ukraine. I'm done with Ukraine.
The clip's about the Ukraine.
Blow it up. I don't give a shit. I want to, you know, if they want a war with Russia, go for it. Let's just find out how big their military has gotten in the last 15 years. What the hell? Who cares? I mean, they want war, go for it. Here's the thing. On the group, on Liberty's Talk, don't join my group to post your groups and shit on there. That's not why I have this group. This group is a working group for people who want to dig deep, get the facts, have conversations about real stuff, so then you can go outside into your world, okay, and be educated and sound intelligent and overcome the ignorance that people absorb because of the trolls and social media and mass media. It isn't a place you can come in and post your thing and then never get involved. Don't join if you're never going to do anything but post your group or your page. That's not what I built it for. I have never once in 2 years I've had this group gone to other people's groups and posted my group saying, hey, come and join my group on somebody else's group. That's as tacky can be. I'm sorry. But don't join if that's what you're going to do. Join if you want to have real conversations. Join if you want to dig and get to the truth and get a clear vision of what's going on in your country on any given topic, whether there's, you know, anything. We'll pick that topic, you know, whether it's Obamacare, the IRS, the Ukraine, Russia, South Africa, you know, South America, whatever, and we go to town on those things. That's what this group is for. Join it if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, and sometimes it gets lively because Rex pops in there and he starts bashing people's heads with opposing ideas. But now here's an interesting thing, and of course the clip I'm about to play is about Ukraine, so we're unfortunately not getting off it, but hopefully towards the end of the clip we're going to tie it back into conservative primaries and conservative versus rhino politics. But I just want you to notice something. In 1924, both the Democrats and the Republicans ran conservatives, real conservatives, for president, both the Democrats and the Republicans. This is 1924.
What year?
90 years ago, 1924. Now, the guy who won was the incumbent because Davis was basically just like him. So when the two candidates are very similar, people tend to stick with the one they got. The guy who stayed in office was Silent Cal Calvin Coolidge. And he was a man of few words, but when he spoke, he struck. And one of the things that he's known for saying is, after all, the chief business of the American people is business. That was in 1924. That was 9 years after the creation of the third central bank, the Federal Reserve of the United States, and it hadn't really come on full yet. Now, the business of America, not the American people, but the business of this government that has appropriated us in the business of Wall Street, is war and plunder in your name, not trade. If we were trading, we would have more jobs, we would have more wealth, and we would have better relations with everybody on the planet. But we are not trading. We are plundering, and we are exporting our inflation, and we're exporting our hedonistic society from Hollywood and Madison Avenue, promoting LGBT, whatever the hell that thing is, you know, in cultures that have vehemently
lettuce,
opposed
bacon,
it.
Tomato.
Yeah, that's the one. Lettuce, bacon, and tomato, penis sandwich cakes for gay weddings. You know, now, if that's your thing, that's your thing, okay? But you do not get to have the right to go into somebody else's country who's already said that we don't want this here and force it upon them. That tends to piss people off, and then they don't like us, and they don't trade with us, and we get not only weaker militarily, we also get weaker economically. So, you know, this is why this ties in, because it's the welfare warfare state. The more imperial they get abroad, the more the police state cracks down at home. The more money they spread around here, the less everybody has, and therefore social unrest begins to happen. The more they clamp down over here, the more they clamp down over here, the more they got to plunder over there. It's a vicious cycle, and it always ends in dissolution. It's what Newt Gingrich in the last election called the managed decline.
Reports of military movements taken by the Russian Federation inside of Ukraine. Russia has a historic relationship with Ukraine, including cultural and economic ties, and a military facility in Crimea. But any violation of Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity would be deeply destabilizing, which is not in the interest of Ukraine, Russia, or Europe. It would represent a profound interference.
Secretary Chuck Hagel, previewing the Pentagon's ideas on how to adapt to government belt tightening, said the defense budget would be the first to look beyond 13 years of conflict, shifting away from long-term ground wars like Iraq and Afghanistan.
These recommendations will adapt and reshape our defense enterprise so that we can continue protecting this nation's security in an era of unprecedented uncertainty and change.
Hagel announced that the Pentagon would shrink the U.S. Army to pre-World War II levels, eliminate the popular A-10 aircraft, and reduce military benefits in order to meet 2015 spending caps.
I looked into Putin's eyes and I see three letters, a K, a G, and a B. He's an old KGB apparatchik surrounded by his buddies who were in the KGB, and he's not going to restore the power and prestige of the Soviet Union. But he is trying to restore the Russian Empire, and he enjoys sticking his thumb in our eye. And we're not going to see a reignition of the Cold War. But when we try to make progress on Iran, he's going to block it. I mean, duh, we figured it out.
How would you handle the relationship with Putin?
I would. I don't know if it would work, but I might disinvite him to the next G8 meeting. These countries in the G8 are supposed to have common economic principles and values. He's basically turning every industry and every enterprise into a state-run organization, i.e. he and his cronies are dividing up the dividend. If it wasn't for oil, the Russian economy would be in the tank. They've got aging problem, they've got AIDS problem, they've got every kind of difficulty. Our friend Dr. Kissinger, I'm sure you admire greatly, once said, that was a joke, once said, Russia without Ukraine is an Eastern power, with Ukraine is a Western power. I think that's very true when you look at what used to be the Soviet Union and what it is now. So, I don't see a reignition of the Cold War and all of that kind of stuff, although nuclear weapons, we still need to continue the non-Luger.
Your friend, U.S. Senator COVID. John McCain has said on Twitter that you could follow the fate of Muammar Gaddafi. Do you think it's an idle threat or a real plan by the West?
Well, calling him a friend is probably an exaggeration. Although I have met Mr. McCain, I think it was at that memorable Munich Security Conference 4 years ago. Yes, I've seen that statement. What can I say? First, his words weren't meant for me, but for all of Russia. Some countries would want Russia to step aside, to get out of the way, and stop interfering in the ruling of the world. They're still afraid of our nuclear potential. That's why Russia is always in the spotlight. That's why it's a pain in the neck for many. We have an independent foreign policy, and I hope it stays this way in the future. Of course, that's not very convenient for some people. Second, the West is not monolithic, and we do have more friends than enemies. Third, Mr. McCain is known to have fought in Vietnam. I believe he has enough civilian blood on his hands. Is it that he can't live without such horrible, disgusting sights as the butchering of Gaddafi? The whole world saw him being killed, all bloodied. Is that democracy? And who did it? Drones, including American ones, delivered a strike on his motorcade. Then commandos, who were not supposed to be there, brought in so-called opposition and militants, and killed him without trial. I'm not saying that Gaddafi didn't have to quit, but that should have been left up to the people of Libya to decide through the democratic process. It's a long and difficult way, but it's the only way to do it right. Mr. McCain was taken prisoner in Vietnam, and was put not just in jail, but in a pit. He sat there for several years.
Troops have come in, moving out of the very vital base to, at least in Putin's eyes, of Sevastopol, into the area. They have taken control of the airport, the two airports, and these people are paramilitaries. As you discussed earlier, it's not going to be Russian tanks. It's going to be Russian special forces, special operations people, FSB, that'll basically be taking over the country. And when the president said that he told Putin there would be costs, I hope he was specific in some of those costs, because there are a number of costs. You were talking to the panel before, and maybe I could mention a couple of them. One would be a Magnitsky Act expanded, holding those who are responsible for this, responsible for the actions that are taking place. Another would be economic sanctions that would be far-reaching. Another would be to restart our missile defense capabilities in the Czech Republic that we canceled. Another would be to expedite membership of Georgia into NATO. And so there's a number of other actions we could take, and obviously we're not going to be sending troops anywhere or armed conflict. But I really believe that when Vladimir Putin looks around the world, sees what happened in Syria when the red line turned pink and the president didn't act, our acquiescence to their occupation of Georgia, all of the actions that have to do and indicate a decline of the United States of America.
An easy solution. I think that's what we should do. I think we should always be a guiding light and force and admonishment for freedom and free elections. But Ukraine has a long history of being, either part of the Soviet Union or within that sphere, common language, etc. So I don't think it also behooves us to tell the Ukraine what to do or to, I'm not excited about saying, hey, let's put the Ukraine in NATO to rub Russia's nose in it, you know. It's the same way it goes with Georgia and a lot of these other little satellite countries around Russia. I think we should trade with them. If they want to be part of the EU, I think that's fine also. So trade is good, but I think trying to rub Russia's nose in it with saying, say, oh, they need to be part of NATO or a military alliance is not a good idea. You know, I think that we still need to be conscious of the fact that Russia has intercontinental ballistic missiles, and that while the Cold War is largely over, I think we need to have a respectful, sometimes adversarial, but a respectful relationship with Russia in the sense that I think that some on our side are so stuck in the Cold War era that they want to tweak Russia all the time, and I don't think that's a good idea. I think really we should have trade and relations, criticize them if they have human rights violations, but for the most part we should be very glad that we've gotten beyond such a tense situation that we're worried at any minute, we could have a nuclear war. And we ought to be, proud of where we've gotten with that relationship. And even when we have problems with Russia, realize that we're in a much better place than we were once upon a time.
Wow. You heard there Senator Jihad Jane Muhammad, Rhino, Arizona. Arizona, for God's sake, if you don't recall this guy, we're going to sell you to Mexico. But just don't send him back to Washington. He's dangerous. All right. Now, look, let's be clear about something. McCain was a military man. Generally speaking, people who fought in wars loathe to go fight in another war, not because they're cowards, but because they know how horrible it is and that we should try every other possible solution to a problem before war. McCain's gone the other way. The guy's never met a war he doesn't like, and so here you have a former KGB head operative and a ophthalmologist from Kentucky sounding sober and not necessarily on the same side of every issue and not necessarily looking at the world the same way. I mean, the Russians are Russians. They're not us, okay? But here you got Putin sounding sober, you got Rand Paul sounding sober, and then in the midst of it you've got McCain, and McCain represents the neocon establishment of war, 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 and corporatism, corporatism, corporatism. And for all you pink-pantied liberals out there who still think that Obama is the progressive icon that you dreamed him to be and he's hoping changing, the dude is a neocon meat puppet. He's killed more people than Bush. He's violated more constitutional issues than Bush. You hated Bush for it, but you love Obama for it. Give me a friggin' break.
And bragged about it.
Yeah, I want to get off this whole Ukraine thing, but it just it shows you the striking issue, and you know, well, foreign policy and the Fox noise is just always beating the drum for wars and neocon bullshit. You know, in Washington, generally speaking, when it comes to foreign policy, both parties tend to agree and stand behind the president. Really, is that what happened with Syria? No. So now we got the issue with Ukraine. Are we going to let them fold this time and drag us into a war that we can't afford? And this is not, you know, bombing Gaddafi in a motorcade or toppling the last secular Arab regime where Christians are protected. You know, this is Russia. This is Russia. You are poking directly at Russia. That's insane.
Let there be war. Oh, wait, that was supposed to be let there be light. Yeah. Yeah, we're in trouble. We're led by insane people. And I've said this before, and you got a kick out of last the other day. I am not anti-war. I'm not one of those peacenik kind of people. I'm kind of like kick ass, take names, you know, be the first responder. Somebody comes in your house, you know, do what you got to do. I'm not one of those kind of people. So I'm not anti-war. I'm anti-bullshit. And I'm sick of people raising my taxes and lying to me and lying to the country and not taking care of internal responsibilities, including, you know, what the frick are we doing over there messing around with Russia when we can't even secure our own damn border, our own southern border? Are you freaking kidding me? You have to put this stuff into perspective. We have a big, messed up, great country that has been destroyed by corruption. I mean, you want to, for everything you want to bitch about Putin and Russia, you know, which is still only 15 years new as a country, okay, in terms of whatever issue you want to pick, I can take you right to America. Hey, why don't you go downtown right by the White House and have a little protest and see if you don't end up in jail, you know, like that pastor, okay? Mm. How about a law that says if you protest too close to Secret Service protecting politicians, it's a felony. Okay, here's a good one. You go have a little protest and go throw some napalm on the police and see what the frick happens to you in a U.S. city. Or burn a building. How about that? That'll work.
Jaywalk. Or just jaywalk, yeah. And see what happens to you. Hey, real quick, yeah. I know you want to keep going, but I just want to remind everybody, you've got less than a minute and a half before, if you're listening to your browser live right now, it's going to cut you off. So if you're listening live and want to hear the rest of the show, we're going to wrap up in the next 20 minutes, 646-649-1013. Call in now. You can listen on your phone. If not, just catch us in archives. So just go to Blog Talk Radio, search out Liberty's Thunder, find this show, click on it, and it plays right in your browser. And you can even fast forward 2 hours and listen to the end of the show. All right, back to you.
Oh, the end is always the best. That last 20 minutes is always the best because we've ranted and raved and, you know, we finally slow down and get sane. But I really think that people need to wake the hell up. It was kind of disappointing to me to see the tone of people who I thought I've spent 2 years, you know, through the primaries, working with people on different groups and communication and all the things that we've done, to see people buy into this media-controlled left-wing lie. You know, Obama sent in his neocon assistant state director into a sovereign country to topple it because they didn't buy into the IMF, EU, get in debt and be enslaved to us deal. And if the Republicans gave a crap about winning, that would have been the conversation, not this, Putin that, Putin this, Putin that, who has invaded no sovereign country since he's been in power. And that is what frustrates me. You know, I mean, I study Russia and Eastern Europe and things like that because I'm interested in it. I have friends, you know, all over the world, and so I like to be abreast of everything that's going on around the world. And, you know, I'm into that whole thing. But, you know, if Putin was wrong, I'd be the first one to tell you that what he did was wrong. But whenever they take a lie and make it the truth, and then people who I think are conservatives buy into that lie and start repeating it, that's what frustrates me, and that's what the hell we need to get back on focus with what's important. Vote the sick, psycho, neocon, indebting and enslaving U.S. citizens out and get some sane, conservative, fiscally responsible, freedom-loving people in. If you don't, this year, 2014 and 2016, kiss it goodbye, because we are already over the cliff. We're not close to the cliff. We approach the cliff in Bush's era. The train is over the cliff. The question is can the tail end of the train body keep it from falling? Will the people of America wake the hell up, quit getting caught up in crap and following the news, getting caught up in the lies and the Oscars and the rest of the crap that means nothing, and focus on holding our people accountable to defending our borders, to defending our freedom, and giving us sound economics? Those are the three major things the federal government's responsible for, and not one of those. Those are all in violation. So while you're worried about what Russia is and isn't doing to its people, focus on America. We're crumbling. They've already been through their crumble 15, 18 years ago and are rebuilding. Ours is yet to come. That's another reason I study Russia. Anyway, I'm done ranting.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, absolutely. And here's the crazy thing, okay? I mean, you know, why is this happening? Why are we suddenly
crazy thing?
One of the crazy. I mean, why are we suddenly engaged in this, playbook right out of 1969? A face off with the Russians, and the difference, of course, being that our military is spread thinner than it's ever been spread, right? And that the Russians are not threatening a communist revolution all over the world. They are talking about protecting their economic interests and their cultural interests in a bordering, neighboring country. Okay, that's a whole different ballgame. Who's spreading communism around the globe right now? The corporatists from Wall Street and Washington, D.C. that have taken over your government. Okay, these are sycophants. It's all about power, and they will suck whatever and kiss whatever in order to get up to that seat of power. Little Crank Dan Johnny, I was the son of a barkeeper, now I've risen to the number three position to be at the seat of power. Shut up and go home, you prick. You are a pussy. When it comes to actually standing up to the president, which is precisely what the Speaker of the House is supposed to do, that's why the Speaker of the House is in charge of the House and the House is in charge of the purse strings, so that when the president decides that he wants to go around invading the world and spending money on all sorts of boondoggles, the Speaker of the House is supposed to tell him, no, the people don't want that, we're not giving you that money. That's what Gingrich did to Clinton. That's what a real Speaker of the House does. This guy offers it all up. And then what happens? It goes over to the Senate. Right? It's a mathematical problem. There's 55 Democrats and there's only, 45 of us, so we really can't do anything until you elect more rhinos. Then we can actually do something. Come on! Are you really buying that? I mean, don't reelect McConnell. I don't care if the seat goes over to the Democrats. It doesn't matter. Oh, Rex, that's crazy. If the seat goes to the Democrats, it's bad for the Republicans. I could care less about the Republicans. The fact is that McConnell is a better Democrat than Harry Reid. He just gave Obama a blank check from now until March of next year. McConnell did that. Crony John Cornyn did that. Jihad Jane McHama did that. Lindsey Graham, pink-painted little sissy that he is, was all for it, but of course he's being primaried, and it's dangerous for him, so they allowed him to not vote for cloture. You see, that's the game that they play. And then, of course, they run around and say, not a single Republican voted for the debt ceiling. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. That's insanity. That makes the Republican surrender caucus in the Senate better Democrats than the Democrats. That's what's going on here. And what are you going to do about it? Well, you can complain. You can bitch about Obama. You can tweet out stuff like, John Boehner's a sissy, stuff like that. That's fine. Okay. But what are you actually doing? Did you get up today? Today's Sunday. So are you going to get up tomorrow? And are you going to do at least three things tomorrow and every single day through November to advance the conservative cause of liberty? Are you going to inform somebody who might be a generally conservative / libertarian voter who has no idea what's going on because they're too busy or they're just uninvolved, and tell them, hey, we're in a battle for the life of our country. These are the guys you have to support. These are the guys you don't have to support. Here's the information. Do your own research. Okay? This is why McConnell's bad. No matter what he says when he's on the Fox Noise, that's just talk. What he really does is this. Expose him. Oh, they say that Ted Cruz is the bomb thrower. Really? Ted Cruz is the only one doing the job he was elected to do. That's not throwing bombs. That's being responsible to your constituents. Okay? These are the things you have to combat. You have to combat Karl Rove's message. You know, all the who bitches the most about the Citizens United decisions and the super PACs? Obama and Karl Rove, the two guys who benefited the most from that decision. And what do they point at? Well, these groups like FreedomWorks and Heritage Action, they're very dangerous. These aren't really the Tea Party. They're appropriating the Tea Party. Really, FreedomWorks and Heritage Action appropriating the Tea Party? Look, I like some of what Heritage Action does. I like what some of FreedomWorks does, right? But if they don't do something I like, guess what? They don't own me. They don't own the Tea Party. They don't own the Tea Parties. They don't own the Liberty Movement. If they do something that helps us, great. And if they don't, screw them. But guess what? You need funded organizations to launch campaigns. You need funded organizations to put out the ads. Someone has to do it. But ultimately, it comes down to the grassroots. Have you knocked on a door? Have you made a phone call? Have you reached out to somebody? 114 million people did not, eligible voters, did not vote in the last election. 114 million. Those are the people you have to reach and get them involved. Midterms are notoriously lower turnouts. If you could increase turnout for conservatives and libertarians, the real ones, just 2 or 3 points, it'll be huge. It'll make 2010 pale in comparison. It'll make 94 pale in comparison. Essentially, it'll make 1980 pale in comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, the House was Tip O'Neill's house in 1980. You got Reagan, but the House was Tip O'Neill's. And you also had, you know, George H.W. Eat My Shorts, There's Some Taxes, Bush. Okay? So you've got to do something every single day. Now, do you like doing it? Maybe, maybe not. Do you have an option? Sure. You can choose to not do it, but then what are you doing bitching about? Oh, well, I'm a conservative and the country's falling apart and I'm scared and blah, blah, blah. Do something. Don't sit. If you want to be free and you have a right to be free, preceding that right is the duty to defend freedom and stand up and act every single day for the purpose of advancing its cause. Not the freedom to do whatever the hell you want to do, because if that's the case, we'd all be ripping each other off maybe. All right, the freedom to do what you ought to do to fulfill your individual potential as we live in society together. Government is a part of that. It's not supposed to make you a better person. It's not supposed to give you stuff, okay? And it's not supposed to protect you from every risk in life. Quit being such a weak, lily-livered, you know, subject of the oligarchs. Stand on your own 2 feet. Life is risky. You can't be protected from everything. No one owes you shit. You have to go out and get it legally, ethically, morally. And you have to stand up and defend your liberty. The problem with these sycophants is they don't care about this stuff. They use emotion to rile up your passions and use you against yourself and your fellow citizens. That's the name of the game. Whether it's the R's or the D's, the elephants or the donkeys, it doesn't matter. The rule of law is there for a reason. The reason this country has thrived is because we respect the rule of law. Now, that doesn't mean that whatever they codify as law, well, shit, we have to follow that like Nazis. I was just following orders. I was just following the law. No. The rule of law has to be comported to reason, to the natural law, and constrained by the limits of the Constitution. Now, if those limits are outdated, then you have an amendment process. You have a nullification process. There are ways to do it. You don't just get to have a phone and a pen and a bent-over little orange man handing you all the money that you want and some turtle-looking dipshit who's a better majority leader of the Democrats than the little desert mouse that they've got. That's not how it's supposed to work. All right? Law, the rule of law and practical reason dictates that the rules are promulgated and are clear and coherent with respect to each other. How many freaking conflicting laws do we have? You don't even know how to obey the law. It is all arbitrary, all right? And the rules are prospective rather than retroactive and not impossible to comply with. Okay, that means that you can't make shit up after the fact. You have to. Everybody has to know what the rules are in advance so that we know how to agree with each other. I mean, if we, you know, say, well, on this road, we're not going to decide which side of the road you're going to drive on. And two people get on, and one drives on the left, and one drives on the right. They take a head-on collision, and then you pass the law. Oh, everybody's supposed to drive on the left, and then you bust the guy who drove on the right for doing something illegal. That's not his fault. You have to have those rules in advance, and everybody has to know them. So they have to be simple, clear, and comport with rational logic, not some arbitrary crap. Rules are sufficiently stable to allow people to be guided by their knowledge of the content of the rules. That means you don't just make stuff up. It has to make
sense.
We're
so far.
Yeah.
We're so far.
Okay.
Past
those that. And those charged with the authority to make and administer rules are accountable for their own compliance with the rules and administer the law consistently. Is that what they're doing? Is that how Eric Holder's Department of Justice operates? Is that how my phone and my pen operate? Okay, that's not how it works. But it's to the point where Senator Rand Paul, the junior senator from Kentucky and your liberty champion, had to propose an amendment to the Constitution that says that whatever laws Congress passes, Congress, the executive, and the judicial, yeah, they have to read them, has to be subject to the same rules. I mean, how crazy is it that you need an amendment to state something that's so obvious? Yes, this is a republic. It's the rule of law. If you pass a law, we're all subject to it. Not some are exempt and some aren't. That's no longer about right. It's no longer about duty. It is now only about power
Kings.
And privilege. Yeah,
Kings
power
and
privilege. Well, the late Christian era, because remember that in the Middle Ages, the kings and queens, for the most part, were actually much better. It was in the absolutist period that gave rise to the Tea Party that seceded from Great Britain over an eight-year war and then wrote a constitution to make sure that these rules of law are applied. And, of course, there is a recognized division of responsibility in administering the law. No one can, for example, be simultaneously judge, witness, public prosecutor, and public defender, which means, Mr. Phone and Mr. Penn, you don't get to have secret court and arbitrarily decide which Americans you're going to kill with your friggin' drone. And the NSA cannot wiretap the entire country without due process of probable cause. These are the rules. These are the laws. And what do? They call those of us who have elected people into the House and the Senate, legislative arsonists and anarchists, because our position is obey the rules that have been set fairly in order to prevent or minimize corruption and chaos and arbitrary power.
You know,
we're the anarchists?
No, I just had this flash of a parallel. So in the Ukraine, not to bring up the Ukraine again, but this is an important point. They had an illegally elected government, and it turned out kind of corrupt, kind of screwed up, wasn't taking care of business. And so then we go in and we back a fascist element to cause a coup, i.e. revolution, because they weren't happy with the government, even though they have elections coming up in a couple months. Does that mean that if the U.S. can do that in other countries, that we should be doing that here? Is that what they're saying by that action? The reason I'm saying that is that concept of what you said, that everybody is beholden to the same laws. So if you have a government that can choose which laws it's going to follow and change it depending on the circumstance and who's in power and who wants what and which oil company wants to frack, you know, which country and which part of it, then who is the law for in this country? It's all about you. And they're not protecting your freedoms. Bill of Rights is gone. I mean, I watched this happen years ago, but it really is gone. And the only thing they haven't figured out is how to take our guns yet. But, I mean, you know, from whistleblowers to spying on people to, you know, illegal taxes to illegally making you buy shit you don't want to buy to, you know, freedom of speech to right of assembly. All that stuff is abused right now. All of that stuff. These were set in stone, black and white, given to you by God. kind of rules that had nothing to do with the rest of the, well, kind of a lot to do with the rest of the Constitution, but as a framework going into the Constitution when they started talking about the rest of what the government was supposed to do and not do. But these were set in stone. Every one of these has been abused. Every one of these is being abused every day, 24/7 in this country. And you're worried about the Ukraine? That's the thing. That's the thing that people need to get focused on, because if, and this is something I've said before, and I don't think people really get this. If the U.S. government can do all the shit that they're doing all over the world, some of it's pretty freaking crazy, like, you know, what's going on in Syria, what's happening in the Ukraine. I could name dozens of countries where you're like, they're really doing that? Is that legal? No, it's not. Not by our, you know, rules in our government and foreign relations and State Department. But they do it anyway because, number one, you don't know about it. Number two, if you do find out about it, then they've got all the news agencies to spin it. And number three, if you get caught up in committees, nothing ever gets done anyway because people like John Boehner will never, you know, have a special committee on anything. So it's just a spin, spin, spin. But if they're willing to do it this to other human beings all over the world because for some reason we think we're special, well, I think other people in other countries think they're special too. You know what I mean? Their life is important to them, their future, their children, their family. Yes, no, yes. All right. If we can do that to any country in the world at will, and some of this stuff is pretty ugly, what the hell makes you think they wouldn't do it here? That's the point you got to get clear in your mind. Because it's not a matter of, well, nobody's looking, so I can do this terrible, ugly, evil thing over here, but nobody's looking. But when I'm exposed in my own country, I'm all self-righteous, and human rights is important, and personal freedom and all that shit. That's all important over here. You know, it gets really muddled after a while. And you got to ask yourself, and that's that whole thing of character, what you do when nobody's looking is who you are, not what you do when people are watching you. So if your government has zero moral accountability to sanity, human rights, economic soundness, or anything else, what the hell makes you think that in time, with enough power, that they won't do it here? You think they give a shit about you? You're a work unit. You're a taxable item. That's it. The only person who cares about you is you, your local government, where you can look a man in the eye and say, no, you can't vote that law in. That's bullshit. Outside of that, you're just a number. Just like the people in Africa or the Ukraine or anything else, you're just a freaking number, and there's a resource to plunder somewhere and some piece of a market that some company can get a hold of that's connected to the government. If the government will go in there and do this and disrupt that and topple this government, you think those people care about you? You're insane. You need to wake the hell up. This is not 1980s Ronald Reagan era USA anymore. A whole different game we're in today. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I had that roll around in my head.
I didn't know that you interrupted me. Is that your closing argument, or do you just want me to rest?
Yeah, really, I guess it was. Because, I mean, it's a wake-up call like I've never seen in my life. There's no freedom, you know? I mean, we got more citizens in this country killed by police than we have lost soldiers in the Iraq War. Nobody freaking questions it. That's the scary part, Rex. That's the part that bothers me. Hey, things happen. You know, it's a bad, ugly world and all that wonderful stuff, but there's some really crazy, insane shit going on, and people just keep rolling along. It's the Oscars. It's the freaking Super Bowl. Hey, America Idol's back on. Hey, I got my meds from my doctor today. Everything's good. They sent me a check in the mail. I got my freaking food stamp card and my free phone. And, hell, the border's wide open, and we got freaking, you know, South American drug cartels operate in the United States, and then we find out that the government's working with one of them, you know, and that should have been top news. I remember a day that would have been top news 24/7 until somebody in government was held accountable, and it was a blip on the screen. And I'm just like, wow, wow. And the Vietnam War and all that shit and the rise of the social revolution and, oh, you know, the anti-war crowd, now they're in power And they're more totalitarian than any group I've ever seen in my life, in my history. You know? And you kind of go, and people aren't even questioning it. This exposure to the NSA and the Snowdens, well, of course, you don't get anything. I mean, this shit comes out every day. If you go overseas, go to, you know, Daily Mail or RT or whatever, you get all the shit that's happening, all the stuff that's being exposed, all the new stuff's being exposed. You come to America, and we're talking about the Oscars on Fox and how evil Putin is. Yeah, that's the important thing. Yeah, he can't protect his own freaking people in that country. What's he doing?
Who's he? Yeah, who does he think he is? Captain Kirk? He's always taking off his shirt.
I love the picture of him riding the bear.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
That's great.
Is Oscars tonight?
That's my closing rant. Hmm?
All right. That was and the Oscar for best closing rant of the evening goes to Trog. Yay! Now don't give a speech. You're already done. I think you're right on. And look, all the stuff we've been talking about, from the Crimea to the Ukraine to Conan the Barbarian to Captain Kirk to pig-pantied communists to Jihad Jane McHammed to Rand Paul to Ted Cruz, Mark Levin, we're talking about two paradigms here. The sycophant paradigm of ass-kissing power to gain power or privilege, or the rule of law. Washington, D.C., is a sycophantic and probably a psychopathic town. That's how it operates. That's why there is an entrenched war party and an entrenched money power and entrenched corruption, okay? But if that is the way you're going to allow it to operate, then you are not a citizen. You are a subject. You have no rights, merely state-granted privileges. You have no liberty, merely freedom of movement as long as they allow it. And it might look like America. You might still see baseball games and Oscars and Kim Kardashian's ass on TV, but it's not America. It has become precisely what the French Revolution of 1789 and the Bolshevik and Menshevik revolutions of 1917 intended for France and Russia. Only difference is here, they would get away with it without any resistance, without any bloodshed. And it would look exactly the same as it looked before, only you've lost it. And we're nearly there. It's what Newt Gingrich referred to in the last election as managing the decline. Do you want it like someone who's going to manage the decline, or do you want someone who's going to actually be transformationally changing, someone who's going to reform what is going on and take it back to where it was? Oh, where do you want to take it back to? 1950s, leave it to Beaver Rex? No. I want to take it back to the rule of law and apply it to the 21st century, given our current culture, our current technological capability, and our current mindset. But the principles of the rule of law and the principles of the Constitution have to always be referred back to, because that is what has gotten us to where we are. And ignoring it is what has caused all the problems that we have. And one of the biggest problems with it is not recognizing an objective moral order that we can point our finger to, all right? Now, this is not a theological issue, okay, but it touches on it. But this is right from Russell Kirk, okay? It's the first of his principles of conservatism. And he says, this is Russell Kirk, okay? Now, this is not some, you know, schmo. This is a man who's written a lot about conservatism, thought deeply about it, has written tomes about it. You really need to know who he is. Go to the KirkCenter.org and look it up. It's also posted in Liberty's Thunder and also Liberty's Talk on Facebook, so go there and check it out. This is the first of his principles that he mentioned, and this is not principles he came up with. This is what he has seen that actual conservatism was. First, the conservative believes that there exists an enduring moral order. That order is made for man, and man is made for it. Human nature is a constant, and moral truths are permanent. If you don't believe in those things, you're a relativist. You've imbibed heavily on post-Enlightenment, post-Christian, post-modern absence of a firm truth and an objective order. And frankly, I don't even know if we can bring you back from the brink, but if you're in that paradigm, then none of this stuff's going to make sense to you. This word, order, signifies harmony. And there are two aspects or types of order: the inner order of the soul
and the outer order of the Commonwealth. 25 centuries ago, Plato taught this doctrine. But even the educated nowadays find it difficult to understand. The problem of order has been a principal concern of conservatives ever since conservative became a term of politics. Our 20th century world has experienced the hideous consequences of the collapse of belief in a moral order. Like the atrocities and disasters of Greece in the 5th century before Christ, the ruin of great nations in our century shows us the pit into which fall societies that mistake clever self-interest or ingenious social controls for pleasing alternatives to an old-fangled moral order. Okay, he goes on. You should check it out. KirkCenter.org, look it up. It's also in Liberty's Thunder and on Liberty's Talk. Now, why is this important? This is precisely where F.A. Hayek was going in his development. And remember that he was a student of von Mises. And von Mises is, quote, a liberal, not in the political sense where he goes on the left, but a liberal in the sense of his modern outlook, okay? And it was all about utility. About utility. In other words, what's effective and efficient, not what's right and what's wrong. Because Austrians believed that everything was subjective. Now, from an economic perspective, that may be true, but that is eliminating the moral dimension of an economy. The moral dimension of an economy means that man, us, people, are not here to serve the economy. The economy is here to serve people. The moral dimension is that all of these activities, politics, economics, what have you, is about people. It's about human flourishing. It's about people fulfilling their unique individual potential. It's not about being servile to a market or servile to a state. And that's where the fundamental problem is. So Hayek started to move away because he realized that this utilitarian approach invariably leads to socialism. And he was a rabid anti-socialist. So he decided that this whole utilitarian thing had to go, but he never quite got to the point where he realized that the reason that utility fails eventually is because you've taken away its moral dimension. Utility is great for measuring economic decisions, for choosing between goods, for figuring out what service to buy, for trying to figure out the most efficient way to bring something to market. But it says nothing about people, and that's what always has to come first. And unfortunately, this is where liberal Austrian economics and liberal Marxist economics get it wrong because they're both cut from the same cloth. An ordered free market is one that is very conservative. It means that we have a free market, but one that is not without order, which invariably involves government. But if you're going to involve government in economic action, and let's keep something in mind, economics here, we're not talking about finance and stuff, we're talking about its basic form. Economics is human choice, human action. The government does have a role to play, but this is also where the government tends to get way out of hand. Our founding fathers knew this, and the box that they put it in was the rule of law. And that is very, very, very important. Writing maybe 40 years ago, I'm not sure, John Courtney Murray wrote, "The Bill of Rights was an effective instrument for the delimitation of government authority and social power, not because it was written on paper in 1789 or 1791, but because the rights it proclaimed had already been engraved by history of the conscience of a people. The American Bill of Rights is not a piece of 18th century rationalist theory. It is far more the product of Christian history. Behind it, one can see not the philosophy of the Enlightenment, but the older philosophy that had been the matrix of the common law. The man whose rights are guaranteed in the face of law and government is, whether he knows it or not, the Christian man who had learned to know his own personal dignity in the school of Christian faith." Oh, Rex, there you go, mixing theology and politics again. No. All right, your faith, your beliefs, your religion is up to you. You work it out with God. That's not what this is about. That's why the first article of the Bill of Rights is the freedom of religion and the free exercise thereof. But what it means is that the giants on whose shoulders the founding fathers stood and who have passed liberty on to us recognized that liberty could not have germinated in any other culture, and it took us near 3,000 years to get there. It couldn't have come up and germinated in any culture other than the Christian culture, which is what Europe was until about the 16th century. So there's no denying it. It's not a theological proposition. This is an issue of history. It was a Christian culture. And not only that, but it was a Christian culture with classical roots in classic antiquity. Remember, Plato, Aristotle, those guys were pagan Greeks. Until St. Paul evangelized them, they didn't know anything about Christianity. But they understood that liberty has to have an objective order. They even acknowledged an immovable prime mover. They just didn't know who he was. This is what you have to understand. Without that point of law, and that law is the natural law. We're not talking about theology here. We're talking about philosophy. And natural law is discernible. And for all you Christians out there, don't panic, because the Bible is very clear. It says that the Gentiles can know the law. It doesn't have to come from Mosaic law, and it doesn't have to come under grace. Grace is about salvation. But knowing the law of right conduct is based on reason and reason alone. And you don't need faith to understand it. It's a perfectly rational proposition. There is an order. And that order is reflected in the positive laws that we make. And that's precisely why the Constitution works, and that's precisely why the Declaration of Independence is a natural law document, because it says self-evident truths. Well, how can truths be self-evident? They're self-evident because they are what they are in reality, period, no matter what anybody's opinion about it is. This is how we order our lives together, and you make the rule of law the binding force for all of us. See, because if we're all bound by reasonable laws, nobody has privileges, and nobody's under anybody else's boot. The sycophants don't want reasonable laws. They see the law as a stick they use to beat you to pry privilege and power for themselves. And those are the two paradigms that you have a choice for our future. Either the sycophant Democrats and the sycophant rhinos, or the champions of the rule of law and liberty, the real conservatives like Senator Ted Cruz, Senator Rand Paul, Senator Mike Lee, work hard every single day to further the conservative cause of liberty, take over the GOP, and restore legitimate order to Washington, D.C., or brush up on your Cyrillic and your Mandarin. But I'm optimistic because I think this is the year that we can start turning it around. And that's exactly what we're going to do, but not this Thursday. But hopefully we'll be on the air Friday. Make sure you go to our page, and we'll post it there for you. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
May the thunder of liberty rumble on.
At my signal, unleash hell.
And I note that the senator from New York stated that I, quote, have advocated shutting down the government. That statement, unfortunately, is a flat-out falsehood, and I know the senator from New York would not do so knowingly, so it must have been a mistaken statement, because throughout the course of this debate, I have said repeatedly in every context, we should not shut the government down. A shutdown is a mistake, and I very much hoped that the majority leader would not force a shutdown on this country. We are in a shutdown because the Democrats in this body have refused to negotiate, refused to compromise. And I would note as well, I am quite grateful for the majority leader's admonition this morning towards civility on the floor and the senator from Illinois' admonition towards Rule 19. That is an admonition well heard. Indeed, it was quite striking. You know, it has been several days since I have been to the floor of the Senate, and yet I feel that I have been here in absentia because so many Democrats have invoked my name as the root of all evil in the world. And indeed, the same majority leader that gave an ode to civility just a few days ago was describing me and anyone who might agree that we should stop the harms of Obamacare, describing us as, quote, anarchists. So I think the encouragement towards civility is
the only thing that can change course.
We the people.
Is the American people rising up. And, you know, look, I think where we are is a lot like the late 1970s. late 1970s, you had Jimmy Carter in the White House. You had terrible economic policies that produced the exact same economic stagnation, the same malaise we're seeing now. You had the same feckless foreign policy that made the world a much, much more dangerous place. And Washington Republicans in the late 1970s were every bit as hopeless. But what happened is all across the country there began to be a grassroots movement. Millions of men and women that became the Reagan Revolution. It was a lot of people who'd never been involved in politics and who understood these politicians in Washington are lying to me. Why is Congress at 13% approval rating? Because people don't like to be lied to. And that grassroots revolution in the 1970s transformed the country, pulled us back from the fiscal and economic cliff we were facing then. And what happened then is the Washington politicians got in line. Why? Because when the people rise up in overwhelming enough numbers, ultimately sovereignty lies in we the people. I think the path forward is exactly the same today.
Mm-hmm. But I notice, well, let's turn to Obama at this point. Obama with his executive orders. Rich, Mr. Producer, do you have that cut one there, please? I want you to listen to this, Senator Ted Cruz. This is Obama 5.5 years ago when he's running for president. I just want you to listen to this. Cut one, go.
You know, I taught constitutional law for 10 years. I take the Constitution very seriously. The biggest problems that we're facing right now have to do with George Bush trying to bring more and more power into the executive branch and not go through Congress at all. And that's what I intend to reverse when I'm president of the United States of America.
You're a student of history. I'm a student of history. Obviously, the president of the United States is doing the opposite of what he said 5.5 years ago. I have never in my life seen a president conduct himself this way. I look throughout history, maybe FDR, but not really even FDR. I have never seen a president so brazenly and openly say, I'm going to break the rules, I'm going to defy my oath, I'm going to violate the separation of powers, undermine Article 1, and catch me if you can.
It is entirely unprecedented. It is one of, if not the most dangerous aspect of this presidency, is the contempt for rule of law and the consistent pattern of lawlessness. We've never seen a president who, if he doesn't agree with a particular federal law, simply refuses to enforce it, refuses to follow it. When he disagreed with immigration laws, he announced the federal government wouldn't enforce federal immigration laws. He did the same thing with marriage laws, with welfare laws, with drug laws. That's not the way our constitutional system works. And the most egregious example is Obamacare. Over and over again, the president says it's the law of the land, and yet over and over again, he brazenly violates the law. The law of the land, the text of the statute, says that the employer mandate kicks in January 1st, 2014. And yet he unilaterally violates the law and grants an exception, a one-year exception to his buddies in big business. Directly contrary to the law. He did the same thing for members of Congress. The text of the law says members of Congress will be on the Obamacare exchanges with no subsidies, just like millions of Americans. Harry Reid, the Senate Democrats, came to him, said they didn't want to be under this law. And he unilaterally granted them exception, just violated the law. And the most astonishing example was when over 5 million Americans lost their health insurance because Obamacare made the plans they liked they had illegal. You know, the usual thing that the 43 presidents who preceded President Obama would have done is to go to Congress to say, listen, this federal law, it's not working. Millions of people are hurting or losing their jobs. Let's change the law. That's the constitutional system. Instead, the president held a press conference where he instructed private insurance companies, go violate the law, issue policies that are illegal right on the plain text of the law. For 1 year, I'm telling you to do that. Now, there is no precedent in our history for a president of the United States to instruct private companies and private citizens, violate the law with impunity because the president's telling you. And this... Look, Mark, this ought to concern more than people like you and me. This ought to concern more than the conservatives or Republicans. This ought to concern Democrats, independents, libertarians. This ought to concern anyone who believes the constitutional limitations on government are important to liberty. Because when you have a president who can pick and choose which laws to follow and which to ignore.
Well, let me
you no longer
this
have
from
a
my friends at the Wall Street Journal editorial page in 1979. The Wall Street Journal wrote, "For political packaging, we do not need to turn to a 68-year-old man." Well, maybe they'll write tomorrow, "For political packaging, we don't need to turn to a 68-year-old woman," who would be Hillary Clinton. But I digress. Now, as you heard from my friend Jeff Lord, Gerald Ford went on to lose to a very weak Democrat candidate named Jimmy Carter. Reagan went on to win in 1980 and 84, two of the biggest landslides in American history. Popular vote, I would remind Karl Rove and Electoral College. Now, having campaigned personally for Reagan in 1976 and 80, I want you to listen to me. I feel certain he would be enormously proud of you. In fact, I bet he would have been thrilled to stand before you right here and thank you for all you're doing and all you've done and congratulate you on this fifth anniversary of the Tea Party movement. And I think it's appropriate to end my comments with a truism from President Reagan, which is the last paragraph in my book, Liberty and Tyranny, which most of you have heard by now, but I'm going to repeat it anyway, for those of you who haven't. Reagan wrote and said this many times, "Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and hand it on for them to do the same. Or one day we will spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it was once like in the United States when men were free." You folks, you're an inspiration to people like me and millions of others. It's a great honor to be here, and on behalf of all those other people and your fellow citizens and generations yet to come, I want to thank you. And God bless
all. In 1981, our critics charged that letting you keep more of your earnings would trigger an inflationary explosion, send interest rates soaring, and destroy our economy. Well, we cut your tax rates anyway by nearly 25%. And what that helped trigger was falling inflation, falling interest rates, and the strongest economic expansion in 30 years. Over the course of this century, our tax system has been modified dozens of times and in hundreds of ways. Yet most of those changes didn't improve the system. They made it more like Washington itself, complicated, unfair, cluttered with gobbledygook and loopholes designed for those with the power and influence to hire high-priced legal and tax advisors. But there's more to it than that. Some years ago, an historian, I believe, said that every time in the past when a government began taxing above a certain level of the people's earnings, trust in government began to erode. He said it would begin with efforts to avoid paying the full tax. This would become outright cheating and eventually a distrust and contempt of government itself until there would be a breakdown in law and order. Well, how many times have we heard people brag about clever schemes to avoid paying taxes, or watched luxuries casually written off to be paid for by somebody else, that somebody being you? I believe that in both spirit and substance, our tax system has come to be un-American. How would the proposal work? The present tax system has 14 different brackets of tax rates ranging from 11 to 50%. We would take a giant step toward an ideal system by replacing all that with a simple three-bracket system, with tax rates of 15, 25, and 35%. By lowering everyone's tax rates all the way up the income scale, each of us will have a greater incentive to climb higher, to excel, to help America grow. The power of these incentives would send one simple, straightforward message to an entire nation. America, go for it. To young Americans wondering tonight, where will I go What will I do with my future? I have a suggestion. Why not set out with your friends on the path of adventure and try to start up your own business? Follow in the footsteps of those two college students who launched one of America's great computer firms from the garage behind their house. You too can help us unlock the doors to a golden future. You too can become leaders in this great new era of progress.
For one thing, these two issues, the nuclear option and the president's lawlessness, are very interrelated. The reason that Harry Reid broke his word, repeatedly he'd said he wouldn't exercise the nuclear option, and then he just broke his word, just like President Obama did when he said, if you like your plan, you can keep it. The reason he did that is because the Democrats are very concerned about courts holding this administration accountable for their lawlessness, and in particular the D.C. Circuit. The D.C. Circuit is where a great many of these lawless actions are challenged. And this was all about wanting to pack the D.C. Circuit with judges that President Obama and the Democrats think will rubber stamp the president's lawlessness. You know, one of the things that's striking, there have been Republican presidents, unfortunately, who've overreached, who've exceeded their executive authority. And when they've done that, there have been Republicans who stand up and call the Republican president to account, say the Constitution matters and no president, no man is above the law. One of the things that I've found most disappointing, where are the Democrats? Where are the liberals? Where are the journalists and the media calling President Obama to account for disregarding the law?